Oh, motherfucking Seth Buzzard is back, bitches.
What? What are we talking about?
I'm reading up on the history of the Problem Child film franchise. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WTF at TFW episode 207. My name is Vangelis and I am your host this evening. Joining me today is Gog Dog.
Despite keyboards wanting to sabotage me, I am here and eager and willing.
Yeah, all of a sudden, we're about to record and then your keyboard just like went mutiny. Had enough.
I went anti-mutiny.
Yes. So you're rocking some inter-brand material now, I believe you said, the Macintosh
yes,
keyboard.
Yes, my only spare keyboard right now is a Kensington keyboard for Mac, which is now hooked up to my Windows XP machine.
That's just okay. Well, you got to do what you have to do. But also here with us today is Seth Buzzard.
Despite coworkers trying to sabotage me.
Yeah, holy crap.
I'm here and ready to strangle people.
Yo, I never call in sick. Except for all the times I call in sick.
Except for 5 times in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. That guy's not invited on the podcast. I'm saying it right now. That guy's banned.
Yeah.
I'm never letting him on the podcast, ever.
Good.
That's right. Anyway, we're here to talk to you today about Transformers, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to open up by talking about some Fall of Cybertron. We're going to check in on Fall of Cybertron. It's a new month. It's July, so it's a perfect time to kind of round up our thoughts on the last, like, what, month or so of Fall of Cybertron material that's been trickling out. Big reveals that happened of late were a new trailer with some really epic and exciting music and a whole bunch more Metroplex. It's called Through the Matrix. I actually quite like that trailer. The release date is also now a week earlier for everything simultaneously, PS3, Xbox 360, and PC. There's host migration for multiplayer, which I saw get Gog Dog and GMFan101 very excited on Twitter. And confirmation of a new multiplayer trailer and no collector's edition. So, also confirmation of an art book, which I forgot if I mentioned on here. That was actually kind of cool to see. I do not remember if I talked about that on this podcast. But, Seth, I want to ask you how you feel about the Fall of Cybertron so far. Anything new that's piqued your interest, or are you just waiting now?
Just waiting. I mean, it's the slow trickle of information on games. I'm kind of over that, mm-hmm. For any game. It's like, I'll just wait and give me a big roundup later when there's a bunch of information out. But with that trailer, I kind of chuckled a little bit because Optimus is doing one of his big speeches again. And he says, "So I ask, no, I order you to help us." It's like, wow, kind of pushy for somebody asking for favors over here. Aren't we, Prime? Getting a little bossy pants asking for help.
And of a gigantic robot as well.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of cool looking stuff in there, like Metroplex look cool and
yeah,
you know, a bunch of stuff blowing up, but you know, it's a trailer, so it's not really showing you the game, it's showing you cutscenes and whatnot.
I want to
even stuff that is game, like what the game is going to look like. They don't have HUDs and fixed camera angles and stuff. So it's all trailers can be deceptive.
I want to imagine that when Metroplex, it seems every time they show Metroplex transforming, he opens his hand and he's actually holding on to Optimus Prime. I want to imagine he's like, "I order you to be polite," and just like throws Optimus Prime across the town. Gog, how about you? As I said, I saw you. You seem pretty happy about the host migration announcement for multiplayer.
Yeah, that was a big, big deal in multiplayer. It was sucked. Like, you'd go, and as soon as the host realized he was on a losing team, boom, it's over, and everyone's jumped out to a lobby. It made it pretty bad. And it was very, very frustrating. Sometimes it would take multiple games before you got anything going. So the fact that they actually listened to that, I think, says a lot. I mean, it's a shame that they couldn't patch that in before. And I understand there's reasons for why you can't really do that. But yeah, I think that is a big, big piece of news for me. And apparently this was revealed a while back. I was reading the thread, and I guess a few weeks ago, one of the developers or something had posted that on the Facebook page, and I guess nobody really caught on, or the word didn't get out. But
it seems like an easy thing to gloss over until someone who was actively in multiplayer in the war game would be able to tell you that that's huge.
Mm-hmm. I thought the trailer was cool. You know, it's cinematic. I hope the production values of that carry over into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So because the trailers have been looking pretty good so far. So,
I'm pretty sure I'm going to at least enjoy the cutscenes as much as I did in War for Cybertron. Between Metroplex and Bruticus, they've really got across a good understanding, or at least an understanding along my own wavelengths, of how to make it look cool when a giant thing transforms. I really like the way that Metroplex's hand kind of erupted out of a building. And I'm also happy to see that the first wave of the toys have already shown up in, I believe, the UK, or is it Malaysia or somewhere? They're out in a regular retail form, and people are getting a hold of them. And
it's in Malaysia, yeah. Over in Asia, they've been spotted en masse everywhere.
Yeah, and a lot of reviews are coming in, and there are a lot of people who are getting them early, paying through Malaysia on eBay or whatnot, and going like, or Robot Kingdom, I think, might be getting them in soon. They're basically a lot of people going like, holy crap, they're small.
I think mine are on the way.
Yeah.
From Big Bad.
Really?
Yeah, let me double check. But I got a notice that I had some Transformers come in, and then I shipped my pile of loot immediately. But, I mean, that was like 2 days ago, so there's no way they were going to be here in time. But
yeah,
let's see, my account. You guys could keep talking while I look it up.
I was looking at some of the picture reviews of them, and I feel confident that Shockwave is still looking pretty cool, but it feels kind of like some of my fears about Jazz were confirmed, that I never thought he looked like he was super solid in robot mode, and apparently he's not, going by a couple of the reports I read. I still want to pick him up, because I like his alt mode, but seems like a lot of people also kind of just, I guess because not everyone went to a convention to see them in a cabinet, a lot of people just had not quite caught how much smaller these guys are than generations from 09. So,
what is it? Generation Series 1? Is that what they're calling it?
Yep.
2012? Yeah. So it's in warehouse right now. They haven't even shipped it yet. And it's been a couple of days. I kind of miss when Big Bad was a smaller deal and you could order something and if it was early enough, it would get out that same day.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a bummer.
They've gotten big
for stuff to happen now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they still have Prime and Jazz listed as in stock, and apparently they sold out of Shockwave.
That's understandable. Shockwave, by all accounts, I mean, already everyone I think was more excited about Shockwave, and by all accounts, he's the best part of the wave. I think I might go looking for Shockwave at TFCon because I think he's the guy who's cut out in Wave 2, and the other two are coming back for Wave 2. If I remember the Wave 2 case correctly, that being it's a Bruticus and then like a Prime and a Jazz, or two Primes and a Jazz. So I'm gonna keep my eyes open for a Shockwave. I'm gonna be ready to pay like $5 up for him just to secure that. I'm gonna wait in the other ones though. Anyway, Fall of Cybertron, August 21st. It's no longer coming out after my birthday. Now it's coming out before my birthday. So I guess I can play the game on my birthday. Yay!
Are you going to wear a little colorful party hat?
Yep.
And one of those unfurling noisemakers, so every time you get a kill, you could go, wee!
Yeah, I'm going to go on multiplayer, put on my headset, and I'm going to be all like, hey, everyone, just so you know, it's my birthday! So make sure you let me get kills, because it's my birthday! And then when they all kill me, I'll start screaming. I'll be like, you're ruining my special day!
And when you do get a kill, you could go, go, Vangelis, it's your birthday.
That's
every
right.
time you get a kill.
And everyone on Xbox Live will love me.
Yep.
Anyway. all Cybertron stuff. If anything huge comes up, we'll cover it again. Otherwise, I kind of like just doing this little, like, whenever a big roundup happens, just covering that. Because then we don't burn ourselves out talking about that stuff. And I'm looking forward to hearing about the toys from more people. But right now, in the here and now, in the immediate, I'm looking forward to some new picks. I would like to ask you, Mr. Gogdog, what your new picture pick is.
We got, late last week. Let me see. Where is it? Here we go. Prototype pictures of Fans Project Warbot Assaulter.
Yes.
So the Warbot line looks to be in full swing after a long hiatus since the Warbot 01, which was in, what, 2009?
Something like that, yeah.
2010? It was either 09 or 10. Because I remember buying it at BotCon when it was pretty new.
I want to say 2010.
I want to say 2010 as well. Yeah. I don't think I bought it in 09. Nope, I know I didn't buy it in 09. It had to have been 2010.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think this guy looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And that jet mode looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
I always like the idea of just giant oversized jets that look like they look like regular jets, but they're just bigger than everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always got a kick out of that with Skyquake and Dreadwing from Prime. And granted, they're probably actually more along the lines of just being more realistic, where you have Starscream who transforms into a jet that's the size of a car.
Yeah.
But so realistically, jets would be much bigger than most bots that turn into cars and stuff. But it's never really portrayed like that on screen. Like the jets are kind of the thin, spindly, you know, aerial light on their feet guys, where more realistically, the jets would just be so much bigger than everything else. So actually kind of seeing that like this, It looks cool. And they got pictures comparing it to the other Warbots. You have the gray proto pick, or the gray proto assaulter standing next to the final versions of
Defender?
Defender and Steelcore.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's noticeably bigger than all of them.
Freaking huge and wide, yeah. Too. And he's like,
this guy,
chunk.
Yeah. So, this guy looks great. He's so far definite purchase for me. I think I might even be way more excited for him than I am for Steelcore.
That jet mode has such a good shape to it. The silhouette of it looks so cool. And I mean, I can tell from the profile shot, it's completely not aerodynamic at all if you look at it from the right angles, because it's made of gigantic chunks. But I really like how it still looks swept back, and like, to me, it works as at least like a space jet. I really like the shape
and,
of it.
And given that it's a triple changer, I think that's, I mean, it's more than acceptable for what it's
doing. Oh, yes, absolutely. I really like the way that it turned out. I see that there's a return of diecast plating on this guy. I don't know if we got a confirmation of diecast or not on Steel Core, but this guy looks like he has diecast in very similar places to Defender, that being like on the legs. And the aesthetic of it, I love it. I think I said this way back when Defender first came out. These guys still have a very specific, like, Fans Project aesthetic, which is, like, very, like, sharp edges and big blocks. And so that's not going to work for everybody. But I like that they're still embracing that, and they're keeping it looking like these three guys are from the same designer. They all look like they belong together. And I was astounded to see how much bigger Assaulter was than the other two. I was already excited that Steelcore was taller than Defender, because Defender's a pretty nice height. And I'm pumped. I'm ready for it. I think it looks great. Seth, have you checked out Assaulter at all?
I'm looking at the pictures right now. So they've only showed the jet mode?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I'm interested to see what the third mode's going to be. Or exactly how it's going to turn out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think it would be fine with just this one mode. Because Broadside was always goofy, and that's where everyone's trying to make this guy out to be a new Broadside. And if he does have another mode, I hope it is not... I hope it's different enough to not obviously be a revamp of Broadside.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I agree. Like, the jet mode does look really cool, and it is nice that he is big in comparison. And his guns look badass.
Like
his guns.
Looks like you can put a hole through a dude's face with that thing.
And it looks like he'd have to be pretty burly to use them, because they are long guns with no kind of stock to them. So,
no, he's got to be a big guy.
Yeah, because I'm sure those things are going to throw off a gnarly kick. So it just looks like someone that would come and mess up your whole situation if you were on the other side of him.
I'm trying to figure out, I think I like if they do a similar, like, maybe not an aircraft carrier, but maybe like a sort of space docking ship kind of mode or something like that. If you look at the top-down shot of his vehicle mode, you can kind of see his wings look like they have similar shapes in them to that of a flat object that would be like a battleship. But I'm really curious to see what they do, because the Warbots all have a far more like G1 Season 3 aesthetic to them, like a very future vehicle aesthetic. Yeah. Which is really interesting to see applied to Broadside, and that's why I'm I think really excited to see if he does have a third mode, because even if they just do a battleship, if it's like a space battleship, I'll be okay with it.
They've shown concept images of the third mode, we just haven't seen it in the...
Oh yeah, but I mean, those concept images are from, those are from like 09.
Well no, we've seen more recent ones.
Oh really? Of the third mode?
Yeah. I believe so, yeah.
Oh. I haven't seen
it. I remember seeing it. Yeah, we were talking about
it. No, you're a liar.
Seth, you were joking around about it, of how it was turning into like a battleship and stuff, and making
well,
fun of it.
I was making fun of Broadside.
We talked about it.
I haven't seen it. You said that it was supposed to turn into like a spaceship.
We were talking about the pics. That was the whole thing we were talking about.
I don't remember that. Then I forgot.
Okay.
I remember talking about it, but I forget. And I still think that it's goofy, because Transformers have never been in scale. They just never, forget it. It's not going to happen. Mm. But it's goofy as hell to not be in scale with yourself.
Well, no, he's a really, really big airplane.
All right.
Hey, I mean, maybe they're getting it across even better now with this new jet mode. Maybe it's just a big jet carrier. He's full of little tiny Broadsides.
Well, I think it's going to be more along the lines of like Six Shot, where he has like different modes, but they're not really out of scale with each other. It's just, he turns into something that would look kind of like a battleship, but it's more of like a space cruiser, where he has like an Earth jet for like in the atmosphere, and then he has like this kind of more blocky looking thing for when he's flying around in space. That's the way I took it.
Like I said, that's the upside of the Warbots having that future alien vehicle aesthetic, is that they can pull off a lot more of those weird concepts and kind of get away with it easier. And they tend to have very effective silhouettes, so I think it's definitely going to look pretty cool and not probably end up looking like, you know, just a bunch of stuff in the shape of a stick that flies. Well, that would be a pretty fun character concept as well.
Don't put it in any color scheme that is reminiscent of Broadside.
Because
I like what they're going. I like them going like in a more original route.
I like the colors.
Try to eliminate things that invoke existing IP.
I like the colors that they're doing on them in a way, because they look sort of Broadside-y, but I love that he has these crazy stripes on his legs, because number one, they break him up a bit, and number two, they're making a lot of people flip out because they make him look a whole lot less like Broadside. Just make him look weird.
Make it look less like Broadside.
Yeah. Make him purple. I don't know. Looking forward to seeing some color pics of the physical toy, and I'm curious what the release date might be on this guy. If they're showing him now, knowing how Franz Project operates, that's a decent chance of him coming out sooner than later. So, fingers crossed. Seth, what is your new picture pick?
I'm going to go the other way on third-partiness.
Oh. But
first, real quick, last time we talked about Acoustic Wave, and I questioned if it was necessary in a post Masterpiece Soundwave world. And I had a few people on Twitter tell me that apparently that project is either delayed or canceled. So there might not be a reason for it to exist anymore.
That is very true. And I was talking to Chris about that the other week, and I feel kind of bad for those guys, because, I mean, Masterpiece Soundwave looking totally like the 80s cartoon and stuff, it seems obvious, but in the back of my head, I always thought, like, if they do a Masterpiece toy, Soundwave has got to be, like, in the middle of the list, because everyone loves him, but he doesn't turn into something that's super dynamic. So I was actually kind of surprised. He was one of the 2012 masterpieces. So I did feel kind of bad for those guys in a way, because, I mean, to a certain extent, they were taking a massive risk by making a big slavish Masterpiece Soundwave when the Masterpiece line is clearly still continuing. But I'm sure, I have a feeling they might have thought, like, oh, they'll probably redo Megatron before they do Soundwave. And boom!
Yeah.
Now they gotta go back to the drawing board.
I think it's a bummer that those dudes put a lot of time and effort into making something that was looking pretty good.
Yeah.
To just then not put it out. But, you know.
That's how it's got to roll. If they're ditching it and they're going to, like, I hope they at least can use some of that design for something else. But, you know, full props if they were working on it and then they just saw the new thing come out and went, like, all right, well, I guess we got to move on.
That's the way the Energon treat decompiles and crumbles away, I guess.
And lands on some
whatever
guy.
They do. But anyway, so where I'm applauding Fans Project for trying to be unique and original, and then companies like Perfect Effect, even though they're obviously, you know, this is clearly reminiscent of RC, the head is obviously meant to be RC, and the reflector guys are their robot mode have, you know, elements that are clearly reflector based on the cartoon, and Rumble and Frenzy elements are in these guys, but still Perfect Effect kind of has their own style to them. They're like reinterpretations more than straight up, like, hey, we're doing this design over. And Fans Project is kind of going more in that direction and being more unique. These guys, these Toy World guys, announced that they're doing a hardhead, third party hardhead, which is blatantly infringing on IP. I mean, this thing is very, very much obviously a revamped hardhead, like a more articulated version of hardhead. And there's no mistaking nothing with this guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are just renders that we've seen so far. If these renders are indicative of what the final figure is going to look like, then, you know, they're doing a good job, but this is the sort of thing that I think third parties should be getting away from doing.
Just to vouch for Toy World, I'm sure it's going to turn out looking something like that, because they just released Hegemon, and by all accounts, Hegemon was a pretty well-done toy. So I'm sure that if that toy was any indication, then both this hardhead and the Throttlebot that they revealed a while ago that a lot of people forgot about will probably turn out really nice in terms of construction. But yeah, Toy World is doing, they're really just going for it. Like, they're Hegemon, that's Megatron, no bones about it. And it's a pretty interesting design for Megatron, like you know, really unique take on the transformation. Hardhead, that's really Hardhead. I'm actually more interested in their Throttlebot line, because they showed one picture of one. I'll try to find it for you guys. And it was a really cool interpretation of the Throttlebot robot mode. Like, they really went kind of, they went fun with it, and has a lot of, like, weird folding bits and stuff. I don't know, it's really cool. I gotta try to find their main website. I'm gonna go look for that. But Seth, are you considering that hardhead, or do you just kind of like how blatant it is?
Yeah, I more just wanted to talk about how I don't think I support this idea. And, you know, maybe that's kind of hypocrisy, or I'm picking and choosing because I was all into that sound wave, but or acoustic wave, but I became less interested when the official one was announced.
Found the throttle bot.
And I'm all into these mini bots that have been coming out from what's their faces? Those dirty guys.
Oh, iGear's mini warriors.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not like drawing a hard line that I'm not supporting anything that is too on the nose. But, you know, Hardhead's not really a character that I have a lot of history and love for. So it's a little easier to not be into it. But I also want to encourage these third-party companies to move into more original design.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least with Perfect Effect, they're putting just enough into those figures to get, like, people's attention. But there's a lot of really unique and original stuff to them also. Mm-hmm. But this is just kind of straight out aping a design.
And it's weird because up until that hard, like, I think that their Throttle Warrior or their TW01 whatever looks way more along the lines of taking something and kind of rolling with it in a slightly more original way, like going for like that and Hegemon and their upcoming IDW based Optimus Prime design that they have a silhouette of on their site. All that stuff looks like they're going to take things that don't exist in that form, like in that form as far as toys go, and try to make toys of them, which that's one of the more IP infringy things that still gets my interest nowadays is, like, you know, they're going to totally take the image, but they're going to make it try to look like the cartoon, or they're going to make it try to look like something out of the comic books. And
Here's what interests me is this Hardhead was a headmaster, right?
Yeah.
So is this guy going to have a transforming headmaster?
Back of his head looks like it has two little legs folded up against it.
Yeah, so that's kind of what interests me, because I'm kind of like, I mean, I don't know, like, I feel like all of us, since we've had that conversation about Steel Corps, have really been enthused about the idea of the philosophy of third parties just doing original stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that is a great aspiration, and... But as I had said, I think during that same conversation, like, I was really excited to see companies, third-party companies, take on the whole, like, Masters thing, like, outside of Target Masters. Like, yeah, I agree with everything Seth said as far as just straight up, like, copying other characters and all that stuff. But at the same time, giving us modern versions of gimmicks that we're probably never going to see again. Is that that has my interest just in that regard.
I'm kind of like picky and choosy in that vein of, like, if it does something that's IP and fringy, but it does it in a way that I think is interesting, then I'm still digging it. Like, a good way to explain this in the other direction would be the iGear, Ironhide, and Ratchet. Like, they look fine, but once I realized that they were just using the skeleton of Universe Inferno's transformation, I got so much less interested in them, because I was like, I already have that toy. And they look cool, they got all these guns, they got all these different heads to look more like comic book versions and whatnot, and I'm like, that's great, but, like, the base engineering is so much less interesting to me, whereas videos of the transformation. This is, like, the transformation on him is really cool, and it's original, and I was like, that will interest me. If the engineering side of it stays as original as it can, that will still keep me in myself.
And that's always been iGear's problem, is, like, even when they're making their own original stuff, it's ripping off something else. They can't even, it's like they don't even have the sense to engineer anything. They have to copy the engineer and everything else, whereas other, like, look at Fans Project. We just talked about Defender. Defender is most definitely Springer. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Mm.
But that was a completely original design that they engineered and everything from the ground up. So at the very least, they're creating their own stuff.
Yeah. I'll totally, like, from what I've seen, I'll kind of stick. I haven't got one, yeah. But I'll stick by Hegemon to a degree, because I'm like, the fact that they didn't ape the Masterpiece transformation or the Classics transformations pretty much at all, as far as I can tell, I was like, grats. And the dude can even transform into a gun without parts forming. I was like, that's impressive. They took some cool design risks that panned out, and I was like, that's what I want to see. That's why, even as much as I like to kind of poke fun at them, I will always, you know, give Crossover Gen a little bit of a fist bump of like, hey, at least you guys tried to design something original. It didn't turn out great the first time, but, you know, props.
But I love Headmasters, and, you know, we can't even get Takara to reissue any of these things. Like, and that's the part that really pisses me off the most. Like, I'd be scooping up these Headmasters if they'd start putting out reissues for this stuff. But we're going to get the 15th Prime, the 17th Starscream. It looks like from the rumors going around now, we're still going to get that Six Shot. But, I mean, Six Shot's been reissued before. But just all these characters and molds that we've never got. So, I mean, yeah, it's just like I there's a bit of a conflict as far as like how to feel about this stuff, because it's like, yeah, I mean, it's IP infringing, and no one is ever going to, or at least us. I'm never going to claim that these guys just have full right to do whatever they want because, oh, well, Takara's not going to make it. The fans deserve it. You know, I'm never going to say anything ridiculous like that, but, you know, it's like with the Headmasters and stuff, like, that's always something that I've had a lot of love for those types of gimmicks. And if we're not going to get it, I'd love to see someone try to tackle that. And so I am going to be keeping a close eye on this project to see how it turns out, especially since Hegemon turned out so well from what I've heard. I didn't get it, but people seem to be really satisfied with it.
I was going to get it, but then yeah. Steel Corps showed up, and I was like, for everything I just said, Steel Corps is a million times more interesting to me. So I was like, all right, going for that.
Well, for me personally, I'm not really interested in a new version of Hardhead, but I agree the Headmaster gimmick is kind of cool. I would have been more interested if they said, hey, we're doing something like a Headmaster, but it's we're creating our own original line. That would have been more interesting to me. And now maybe these guys, being relatively a newer third-party company, still feel the need to get as IP apen as they can for attention, or Fans Project has been around long enough to where they can kind of head off into original territory because they've built up a reputation and a following.
For sure, for sure. I also question doing Hardhead when, like, maybe the Onslaught repaint is harder to get now, but Head Robots, they kind of finished Hardhead off, as far as I'm concerned. The between doing two, like, the second version of their Hardhead kit, where he has an actual face, like, that makes that toy into a really definitively Hardhead-looking figure. And even if you design this from the ground up to kind of look more like Hardhead, it's like, there are other characters now that could use that treatment more. I think Hardhead, like Head Robots really put a good cap on Hardhead for a while, and I'm really surprised that they didn't go for someone like Chrome Dome.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I may have been more interested if it was Chrome Dome, but it's not, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I say Chrome Dome because he's the first one that comes to mind. Honestly, when are we ever gonna get the other two guys? Like, give us a highbrow. Do up a highbrow and make his head look more like, maybe take some cues from the animated head. Give him like a crazy like pith helmet or something. I don't know. But I want to see what Toy World do. I want to see how their next year pans out. See if they can ride Hegemon in a good way, or if that's going to be kind of a one-hit wonder. I am really surprised they've said nothing about that Throttlebot design, because of all the stuff they're doing, I find the idea of them just doing Throttlebots that look like the cartoons to be really interesting. I'm curious what's happening with that. But I'm going to move into my own new picture pick. I'm going to get away from what all you guys have been talking about and talk about third-party toys. What are available right now?
What?
The Night Morpher Cyclops suddenly showed up as being in stock at TF Source. Not only that, but they took some pictures of it and revealed something that, some of us had heard clues of but never really saw to fruition, that being that this dude comes with a little tiny submarine, a little purple submarine. And then if you look at one of the robot mode comparison pictures, that little submarine also turns into a little shockwave. So let me expand on this for a second. At BotCon, a bunch of us got to see this the Cyclops toy being transformed. In boat mode, it has this gap in the front for the anchor and the chain to store inside. That's fine. But a lot of us noticed that there was like an even bigger gap in there. Like there was a gap for the anchor, and then right next to it was another big compartment. And we're like, oh, is that extra storage for the chain? And dude was all like, you'll find out later. So I hypothesize that little submarine actually goes into the front of the boat mode and basically has a compartment to chill out in there, which I think is really interesting fictionally, because now I'm sitting here going like, so is Cyclops the character of this toy, or is the little dude the character and Cyclops is like his big ass awesome mech suit? And I'm sitting there kind of going like, I like the idea of like this iteration of a guy who's like Shockwave being like this little tiny robot who like has basically like built this enormous like battle suit to operate in. And if you look, the robot mode, the whole storage compartment is mounted on his non-gun arm. So I'm like, I wonder if there's like can you just like put the little boat in there? Or I'm really, really, really excited to see how that little tiny Shockwave works now. Even if it's not like supposed to be the real one, like I also like the idea that the dude's planned ahead far enough that like if he's in a fight and it's like, oh crap, I'm getting taken down, he can like transfer himself into this tiny version and just like escape. Like a built-in escape shuttle for himself. I don't know. I also just like that none of us knew that it was in there until like today. That's a really, the fact that it transforms, and it seems to even transform similarly to the larger toy, like right down to having the same look. It looks like it transforms almost identically on a more basic level. They included a Legends version of their own toy. It's great. I don't know. I love it. Seth, you're a Shockwave dude. How are you feeling about these reveals on the Cyclops?
Well, I would guess that the big, huge boat is the actual guy. And the little submarine is like a drone that can only beep like an armada. Those dopey things.
Beep. But,
yeah, he can only make sonar ping noises. yeah, I love Shockwave. This boat looks awesome. The submarine, yes, very cool. But something about the robot mode just kind of makes me then consider the price a little bit more, and I'm going to end up passing on Cyclops. For better or worse, there may be a day where I regret it. But just, I don't know, something about the robot mode doesn't quite get me over the hill.
If it's any consolation, all previous Nightmorpher toys have been available for a really long time before they sold out. So even if you change your mind, I doubt you're going to be, you know, digging through eBay auctions.
Yeah. You know, we'll kind of see how it goes. I mean, I think it's really cool, like, the whole kind of steampunkiness of these guys. How instead of a laser gun arm, it's a Gatling gun arm. I mean, that it's all cool. And the chain's a neat touch with the anchor. And just the inclusion of the submarine is friggin' rad. But in the end, I'm passing for now. At least for now. It's $160. Oh, my God.
I mean, on the bright side, that single-handedly gets over the TF Source free shipping bump. And it's a huge toy. I mean, like, I saw the thing in person. It's over a foot long in boat mode. It looks like packaged in boat mode.
I was there, man. I saw it, too. I was there.
Yeah, like, the free ship. I saw some arguments about this on Twitter, and I gotta say, like, yeah, free shipping on Cyclops is not a bad deal. Only because he's so enormous. Gog, you got this in a pile of loot, if I believe I recall correctly.
No, I was, I mean, I guess I didn't phrase that great.
Oh, okay. I was confused then.
Well, no, I've had a really tight couple of months when it comes to pre-orders. So I ended up canceling my BBTS order, but, come here pretty soon, when he comes in stock, I think I'm going to add him back in, and that'll give me an excuse to ship it, is what I was... That was what I was trying to get at.
Okay, yeah.
Because I have a huge pile of loot with BBTS right now. I got a couple hundred dollars of stuff in there. Just nothing was really, like, excited. It had me excited enough to want to ship it yet. Like, yeah. I've got that, I've got the Mass Effect 3 Normandy replica. I've got the potato science kit where you plug the GLaDOS thing into the potato, which I want to put on my portal gun. I've got, what else? Some of those original, I guess they were originally the DC Direct figures for the Mass Effect, for a couple characters. Just I have like a Morden and a Legion, I think, and maybe a Tally. I got a lot of Mass Effect stuff, I guess. And a couple other small things, but it added up after a while. But it's like none of it's like I can wait for make it even bigger before I ship it. So I think the Cyclops will probably be what ends up pushing me over the edge. So because I got a little bit of money saved up for TFCon, and I also found out that my company has randomly given me like a couple hundred dollar bonus like the week before TFCon.
Right.
So that's nice. Yeah, so I'm like, that's the perfect time to do that, right before a convention, so that'll work. So I may just spend that on Cyclops and go ahead and ship my pile of loot. So I'm still trying to figure out how I want to do it. I'm getting Cyclops, whether I get him before, during, or after TFCon, I have not yet decided yet. But
this is going to be...
One way or another, I'm going to get
it. This is going to be, I think, a toy that will be... This is going to be one of the TFCon dealer room toys that we see, I think, because TF Source is coming. They've got this in stock. This thing is basically, it's shipping out right now, as far as I heard. So all the dealers who order these kind of things will have them probably by TFCon. I think that there's not, if anyone listening is worried about should they get this before or after TFCon, if you're attending, you're probably going to be safe to wait till TFCon if you do want to see it in person first, because there will probably be a whole bunch of them at TFCon. Like, I'll be surprised if there are not at least like five or six out on the dealer floor. Somehow.
Yeah, the only problem is like with TF Source, I can get it now from TF Source and get free shipping. I can get it now from BBTS, put it in my pile of loot, or I can get it from at TFCon and have to bring it home from another country in a suitcase.
Oh yeah, in your case, it's like if you do feel like you want to wait, you could probably see one in person at TFCon and then do the order from there. If you do feel like waiting just to make sure.
Well, and what's the current exchange rate?
Well, I'm sure TF Source would probably take dollars.
Yeah. So I mean literally, like, you could go to TFCon, see one in person, then just like log on to the internet and add it to your pile of loot or something. Like, if you do really want to wait until you see it in person, or anyone listening, if you want to wait till you see it in person, TFCon, you'll probably see a Cyclops in person. So don't worry about it. I've been sitting here already thinking to myself, like, this year we had three enormous third-party toys come out, that being, like, the combined forms of Hercules and Giant, as well as Cyclops. And I almost, for a second, I was like, maybe I should just bring all three with me. But then I was like, what's the point? Everyone there will be able to buy them. I'm getting ahead of myself now. But yeah, I'm really pumped. I cannot wait to get my hands on Cyclops and see how he works. I have a lot of faith in Mastermind Creations ever since the Annihilator. I always talk about it, but that's because they were the first third-party company I ever saw to really, like, fall and stand up again. So I really hope that this turns out well. I also like that TF Source has to note that Hardhead and X-Graver are sold separately, because they're in the comparison photos. I want to know who the guy out there is that was like, do I get a free X-Graver with the Cyclops?
This is an incredible bargain. I don't think these suckers know what they're doing.
Bunch of fools. I'm going to work them. I'm going to game them.
I'm going to order as many as they'll let me, and I'm going to sell them on the internet for fat profit.
I'm going to get so rich. Bunch of fools. And he sees that disclaimer and just, like, throws a fit.
Oh, I guess I'm the sucker after all.
Wah, wah. Anyway, those are our new pick picks. I want to take a moment to plug some, because we're all here. In case you didn't follow any of us on Twitter or whatnot, myself and Seth and Gog all did a really hell of long podcast about Mass Effect 3 back in April, and it is all up right now. Part 2 isn't up on iTunes, but it's all up and listenable in some form right now, so if you were playing Mass Effect 3 and you want to hear three of us talk about it, that's available. FYI.
Except for we didn't talk about the remixed ending.
Because it did, yeah, it wasn't there yet.
I know. We should.
We can do that later.
We should.
Yeah, I'm up for it. But I wanted to bring that up because you guys are both here, so it's relevant. Ha. What else? What else can I plug? Gog did a cool video about Gutokuru. Go check that out.
We're gonna talk about that later.
Yeah. But I'm in a pluggy mood. Seth found a video about Lego pinball, and I couldn't find a better one. So I'll concede that one. anyway, let's do a listener question. We got a listener question from Sheon14.
We could plug the video I uploaded with my mom.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you uploaded a video with her scene from, I can't remember the name of the movie now.
It's called Psych Out.
Psych Out.
It was one of, it was Jack Nicholson's very first movies. It came out 1 year before Easy Rider.
Oh, wow.
And it, in between this movie coming out and Easy Rider, he co-wrote the Monkees movie, Head.
Friend of mine really likes Head.
I've never seen Head. I want to check
Weird.
Out,
weird.
Well, apparently, they smoked a lot of pot, and Jack Nicholson helped write it. So, of
yep.
course, it would be weird. but, so, this movie, there was the director's cut, and then the producer's cut. And the only place the director's cut was ever available to be seen was the HBO home video VHS tape release.
Good Lord.
The theatrical run and the two DVD releases, at least in Region 1. I saw a Region 2 DVD that had a longer running time, so that might be the director's version. But the shorter producer version had the brief scene at the very beginning of the movie with my mom, who was about 17, getting close to 18, is cut out of all the other versions, all the shorter versions.
Aww.
So I was able to get a little doohickey that let me digitize that scene, and I put it on my YouTube channel, Seth Looks. If you want to check it out, it's there. If you don't, that's cool. But that movie...
Oh, I didn't even know you did that. That's cool.
Yeah, that's a weird-ass movie, by the way. Like, and then if you search for it on YouTube... Some chick from like Norway or something, she's uploaded the entire producer's version. So if you want to see the rest of this weird ass movie, just look for Psych Out.
All right. Yeah, that's cool. I love young Jack Nicholson. He's a wacko dude. He's kind of still a wacko dude.
He's the hippie hero. It's hilarious because his character's in a band, and the scene where you see the band performing, Jack Nicholson obviously cannot play guitar. So you never see his hands playing guitar and his face at the same time. Like when they show the guitar, it's zoomed in, so you can't see that it's not him, that it's somebody else. And then when you see his face, it's always framed high enough to where you can't see his hands not playing the guitar.
Oh, man.
Yeah, all right. It's a low-budget movie about drugs and hippies, so.
And we've also now pulled off a triple plug, which I was worried we would not be able to do, so I feel very satisfied. Ooh. Anyway, do check that out. In fact, go check it out after you listen to this podcast. I'm going to check up on you. If you don't do it, then, you know, you're not a very good listener. We do have a question from a good listener. This comes from Sheon14, spelt Zion14, but there's actual phonetic spelling in the listener question now. The question is, quote, "Hey, Seth Buzzard and the crew."
Okay.
Zion 14 in brackets, Sheon 14. Back with my second question. This is a question I've kept forgetting to send in for a few months. I've been very interested in the animated podcast show The Ricky Gervais Show, and it made me curious to ask what WTF at TFW could be like if some insanely devoted or experienced fan put up animating a few episodes of the podcast. Maybe animating best of moments. I know you guys wouldn't try it on your own, but how would you imagine an episode looking? Art style, location, visual skits while talking about certain things, etc. Thanks for an answer, guys. P.S. I've been listening to the podcast with my hun, and they wanted me to say that Seth on the podcast is cute.
I am. Thank you.
That's a very Seth Buzzard-oriented question. I like that. We don't get enough of those.
He's a cutie.
Wah.
You should totally high-five your hun.
On your behalf.
I keep imagining him just like Attila. Attila's all like, "Ah, he's cute, strong!" And like starts eating some like raw meat.
That'd be awesome. If that's what they meant by hun. It's actually a hun. You got the big round
my
fur
hun,
hat.
My hun ordered me. My hun ordered me to inform you that he thought you were cute.
He would have written himself, but he's pillaging a village right now and really busy.
Oh, God. Anyway, animated podcast clips. Myself, I kind of dig them. I like it now and then when I get linked to like a Smodcast cartoon or something like that. I haven't seen the Ricky Gervais show. I've been meaning to check it out. I like the idea. It's neat. I don't know. I mean, the easy art style would be like the Smodcast cartoon style or like an animated style or something with strong lines and not too much inner detail, because then it would be easy to do in Flash or the like. I don't know. It'd be fun. It'd be neat to see stuff like... actually, I can't think of anything right now. Do one of those for that Kiss Play discussion we had the other week where everything went all strange. And then just like draw everything we're talking about. Or, like, do me up a whole bunch of pictures of, like, my third-party toy idea from last week, the Boy Hunter. Like, that'd be fun. Seth, what about you? What would you like to see out of an animated WTF TFW?
Well, I think you would definitely want to find unusual moments, like that Kiss Play, or even when we were just talking about the guy that thought TF Source was going to give you all these other toys at the same time.
Yeah.
I think if you tried to do a whole episode, there'd be a lot of big, long, boring stretches where we're just being serious and there's nothing funny about it, or nothing really funny you could do with the animation. Because, like, where a Smodcast and their animated bits, they've rebranded it as the Smodco cartoon show now. And they're doing them more regularly with different artists. That and with the Ricky Gervais show, those are shows that are more freeform, where they switch topics pretty radically from moment to moment. So those lend themselves better to that sort of thing, I think. But even with those, they're cut up. Like the Ricky Gervais isn't just a whole episode of their podcast animated. They pick and choose chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And same with the Kevin Smith stuff. So I think it would be incredibly flattering if somebody were to do something like that for us. I would think that was pretty friggin' awesome that somebody would go through the time and effort to do such a thing. But
I'd be astounded myself. Yeah,
to pick a short zany segment. Don't like a or like a a hypothetical situation, like one of those bits.
Yeah,
like those sort of things where we go off on a tangent. But just like, because who would want to watch a cartoon about us talking about,
well, I don't know
a
about
new
the
toy that
of,
was coming up.
The IP infringement factor of this third-party item.
Or even like, I got this specific toy this week and this week and then it's like 2 years later and it's still sitting on YouTube and nobody gives a crap anymore.
Why did someone take the time to animate the moment when one of those guys bought a Transformer?
Well, unless it was when you were talking about getting the dirty look in the toy aisle that one time.
Oh, yeah, that was
fun. We started
fun.
Talking about making it rain loonies and toonies.
But that's a tangential yeah. moment, so that's kind right. of proving your point. But, Gog, what about you? What, animated WTF and TFW.
I think kind of like the Kiss player is a good example, but also for a different reason, because I think the bits that would be the funniest to animate like that would be the ones where we're like showing each other pictures and freaking out, but obviously it's a podcast, so you can't really see the pictures. So just having someone fill in the blanks of like imagining like what it is that we're looking at and showing each other, like, hey, look at this picture, like, oh, cool. And but it's something like somebody just animates something completely ridiculous and but makes it close enough to what we're saying so that it fits with what we're describing, but it's just otherwise completely off the wall and ridiculous. I think that would be fun.
Or just makes it something horrible, just like really horrible. Yeah. That'd be fun
yeah.
too.
Or just mind-blowingly amazing, and then Seth's like, yeah, it's all right. And the thing that was animated is like the second coming.
It's literally the second coming?
Yeah, and then Seth is like, I'll wait for the repaint.
Saw it the first time.
Like the better ones are always lame. Higgs boson particle.
They totally rebooted the whole Jesus thing. It's kind of lame now. I like the original version better.
You didn't get to the end where the twist is that his last name was actually Higgs.
Oh.
Jesus Higgs.
Jesus Higgs.
Jesus Higgs. Oh, God.
Man, yeah. Jesus Higgs, man.
You want some particles?
They got it all wrong.
Totally hook you up with some particles, man.
I want to say, I totally was kind of sitting there nodding a little bit when I read all the people on Twitter going, like, it's amazing that today they discovered the Higgs boson God particle and we're all talking about fireworks and the 4th of July.
Yeah.
But
this is
because,
bad timing for an announcement.
Yeah. And there's no you know, easily applicable consumer version of the boson particle yet. They got to get our bosonic microwaves, as somebody on Twitter told me. I just want things to say bosonic, though, because I think that's a cool word.
I keep thinking that you're saying balsamic.
We're gonna.
Then I want to go get some salad dressing.
We're gonna replace balsamic vinegar with bosonic vinegar. Every bite is a big bang.
It's funny because recently I've been watching TED Talks on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and they're bundled in kind of similar categories. So they're talks from different TED events and different years. And there's one where they have a guy from the Particle Collider. I forget the name of the place.
Hadron Particle.
The Large Hadron Collider or whatever it's called. So they have a guy from there, and he's talking about it before it was up and running. They were just putting the finishing touches on construction, and he's talking about how it's going to work and what they're looking for, and this is the Higgs boson, and this is why we think it's there, and if it's not there, then we don't know what the hell's going on, but we're pretty sure it's there, and we're pretty sure we're going to find it. And then you watch a bunch of more episodes, or they're cut up into episodes, but you watch a bunch of more talks, and at the very bottom, it's like from a year or two later, and it's the same guy back to explain why the machine broke. And how they still haven't found the particles.
We collided too many hadrons.
Yeah.
I felt really happy for those guys when the dudes who postulated the theory and whatnot, like now they're in their 80s and they were tearful and so happy that like something they thought up in their 40s that took 40 years to find, they were there to actually see come to fruition. Like they were so certain that this was going to take like a century to figure out. That's touching. Science, ladies and gentlemen, be excited about it. I try to be.
Watch TED Talks; they're fascinating.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for the listener question, Sheon14. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with some what we gots. I got some gots. to talk about. They're even on topic. So, you know, you can thank me later. I don't know what the intermission is going to be, but FYI, because I get some kind of question about this almost every odd week now. Gog Dog is editing the odd episodes, so he knows where the music comes from. Just going to put that spoiler down. Yeah.
It's always from Japan.
Spoiler alert.
You're assuming that I know where they come from. I don't remember actually telling you that that was the case.
I always assume the best.
Japan. Always assume Japan.
Always assume Japan. That's where the Higgs boson particle came from, right? Yep. They invent all the crazy stuff in Japan.
Well, they were able to find it after it escaped that nuclear reactor.
Yeah, it ran away.
They were hiding them all in the nuclear reactor.
Japan has ninjas, so they caught it, because ninjas are the masters of stealth and deception.
Ninja particle. Way more awesome than the god particle.
Yo, intermission!
So the house.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back and we got a place to crash. We're going to talk about what we got this week, and we're going to start off by talking about our Transformers gets. So I'm going to start off with you, Mr. Gogdog. What Transformers did you possibly get this week?
I got a lot of stuff. You sure you want to start with
oh,
me?
Oh, you did? Holy crap.
I got a lot of stuff.
All right, let's dial this back for a second then. holy crap. Seth, did you get any Transformers stuff this week?
Very little bit.
All right.
I got three new bot shots.
Ooh!
So, kind of just the ones that Gog got last week. Jetfire, Thundercracker, and... I'm tired, man. I can't remember nothing.
Lockdown?
Lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm holding him, waving him in the air, so that I'm going to shake the name out of him.
This one!
Yeah. Well, one of the things that... I do like with bot shot design is, I mean, they're very, very simple. I mean, we all know this. I'm not telling anybody something they didn't know before. But they're able to kind of just change bits and pieces and kind of use, like, the general framework and still make it fairly unique. Like, I'm looking at Bumblebee and Lockdown side by side, and I'm looking pretty close and I'm comparing pieces, and you could see where they can swap parts around and reuse other parts pretty easily. Like with Lockdown, the hood and the bumper are different, the spoilers are different, but you could see the spoiler piece comes up and about half of the roof of the car is attached to that. And if you look at Lockdown and Bumblebee side by side, you could see that the rest of the car, the arms and all the windows and windshield are the same piece. And then you have like this different spoiler hood and bumper attached, but the other bits are the same. And then of course the head is different, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't get the legs to pop down. And then the chest piece is different. But there's still some parts that were recycled.
Yeah.
Which made me interested in getting a hold of Jetfire to see how many similar pieces went across from the Seekers, both being jets. And there's like nothing
that's yeah.
reused.
Except
for like maybe the arms.
A small maybe spoiler. I just got Jetfire, and I held them up to a Seeker immediately because I thought they were going to have shared parts, and I was astounded that there were no shared parts.
You know, that brings up a good point, and something I didn't think about. And I've certainly thought about how they share a lot of parts, and when they designed bot shots, they definitely designed bot shots to be very modular so that they can swap parts in and out from... I haven't looked at it close enough to know, but maybe all of them have compatible parts in some way like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how long it's going to be before we see bot shots customs, because you can pick and choose which bot shots you want, mix and match the parts. Probably the majority of them will be compatible with each other, and you can actually make your own if you want.
Now that we're three waves in, I'm surprised we haven't, because I think at this point the only real blockage is like maybe they're just people don't know how to disassemble them yet, or because I mean yeah, it's just like with G.I. Joe's. How they're kind of like this framework where you can stick all these similar pieces in and have, like, you know, use this guy's biceps and this guy's forearms.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's cool with these two styles of jet. I mean, because I'm looking very closely at the panel lines, and it does look like the arms are shared, but everything else is unique. And then I'm looking at where there's gaps indicating the different pieces on Jetfire. And now, so you have all these pieces that made up the Seeker, and now you have all these other pieces that are generally compatible because they're still basically the same concept, but now you have all these other jet parts, like a different type of canopy and different shape wings, and maybe you can't reuse those thrusters or nose pieces as easily because they're so unusual, but you got these, you don't have like the Delta wing, you have a more traditional wing and different canopy. So, I mean, it's good. And then the feet, I mean, I think the feet are the same across just about everything. I think there's very little difference in feet. Well, I mean, Bumblebee kind of has different feet, but whatever. Maybe the cars have different feet and the jets have their own. Whatever. So, for as simple as these little things are, there's still a good bit of variety happening. I skipped the wrecker car because blech. And I'm going to start getting a little more picky and choosy, like Gog was saying last week, about which ones I pick up from here on out. I still don't have any of the Megatron, so I should probably get a Megatron at some point.
I like his head sculpt. He's got a cool head sculpt in Botshots.
Yeah, but I think the ones that I'm going to still be interested in are characters that I specifically like Lockdown, or ones that are really different and haven't had parts used to hell, like Brawl / Devastator, whatever. I'm not sure what name they went with, but the tank guy from the first Transformer movie. Maybe he shares some general framework or parts with Megatron. I don't know, because I don't have them, but from the ones I have, he's pretty unique. So, yeah, Botshots continue to interest, if not impress. They at least interest. And that's all I got this week. And I'm getting all I should, if my pile of loot gets out of the warehouse and starts shipping, I should have more and interesting things to talk about, including some things from the far off and mystical Asian land of Japan.
You have items from Japan?
Coming.
Oh. Hang on, I gotta... All right, well, I think we'll be able to continue doing this podcast, but, you're gonna have to warn me about this stuff before it starts, coming up, and, people might be subject to it.
It's the bird flu.
Oh, no.
Remember when that was a thing?
Oh, I definitely remember when that was a thing. I kept hearing about it all the time. Like, yo, hey, guy, where's your bird flu at? And I was like, ha, bird flu, that's funny.
I miss SARS. I miss everybody wearing masks at airports.
Yeah, whatever happened to that?
It disappeared because everybody realized they were overreacting.
Yeah.
In one of those TED Talks I watched recently, a dude, he's designing, new types of graphs and ways to visualize data. And he had one graph that he showed. It was... media, things the media panicked about. And when he first presented it, you just see all these different colored peaks and valleys. And then he starts pointing out what they are. And there's this giant peak, and that was SARS. And then a bigger peak, which was swine flu. And then an even bigger peak, that was the bird flu. So that these pandemic scares are getting bigger and bigger, but there's big gaps in between. And then there's a smaller running alongside, because it's all based on a timeline of regular, smaller peaks over years that happen at almost the exact same time every year, just before Christmas. And he asked the audience to guess what it is. And some people in the audience shout out things. And he goes, no, this is the media getting, freaked out about violent video games. Right before Christmas, every year, there's this little video game spike in the media.
Do they still use the clip from Doom? I remember
probably.
A decade, they used that clip from Doom. I remember when it went from being oh man, to oh, that's funny, to I remember I had a PS2, and they were still using the clip from Doom.
Well, it was always the clip from Doom and Sub-Zero ripping somebody's head off.
Yeah.
From the first Mortal Kombat.
Always the same clips. It's so funny. Yeah.
It's there's way more awesome graphics now.
I can do way more screwed up stuff to people, FYI. Yeah. Here, let's play Max Payne 3. Push the button a whole bunch of times.
Babies. So anyway, that's all I got.
All right. I only got three main things here, and I'll go next because it's not too much. One thing I got was when I went over to the States again to visit my good buddy philosopher Kryn, and I found at a Target all the other bot shots I need from the lockdown wave, and I'm still being an idiot and going completist on it. So I got Top Spin, Jetfire, Thundercracker, and Super Bot Megatron, which is kind of like the knockoff version of Super Megatron.
Yeah, I didn't see the clear version that was missing from the peg when I got there.
It looks kind of neat. It's a neat green. It's kind of pretty, and it's got my really cool Megatron head sculpt. But they are bot shots. And at this point, like a lot of people, I think, are coming to their decision on how they're feeling about bot shots. I'm still all in, but I'm not going to lie. I have a little box for my bot shots, and I can't close it very well anymore. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do. Also, I got from Captured Prey the Arms Micron Capsule Series 1. That is the weird, like, Bumblebee and Optimus Prime Microns that turn into, like, a double-bladed sword and a gun. The Gecko and the Snake. Quick capsule review. The capsules they come in are really cool and actually have like a locking clasp. That's kind of neat. The Bumblebee is kind of interesting. The Bumblebee and the Prime have all the paint apps, so they're the most interesting looking ones, and they turn into just little robots, and they're pretty poseable. They've got like ball jointed shoulders and hips. They got knee joints, and all of their joints have a lot of clearance, so they're surprisingly fun to just mess with as little robots. The Bumblebee, kind of, his shoulders are enormous for the sake of his transformation joints, and he just ends up looking like a gun that doesn't have a gun barrel and has two swords on it instead. And the problem with the Bumblebee is that there's nowhere for any of his parts to lock in at all. And so it means no matter what you turn him into, if you start trying to put him into someone's hand or something like that, he'll start to, like, just fall apart, and it's kind of a bummer. On the opposite end of the spectrum is the Optimus Prime one, who turns into a gun super solidly. All of his parts have a place to store. Like, he doesn't, like, lock together, but everything has a place to be, and you're not just kind of, like, maneuvering ball joints around. So I actually really like the Optimus Prime one. But the fun ones are the animals. I'm going to share a couple pictures here. First thing I noticed is, okay, so the Snake and the Gecko, their beast modes are kind of funny looking. Their weapon modes are way more interesting. I'm just sharing a picture I just put up on Twitter of the Prid Viacon. Because of the way his wrists work, you can mount weapons on him kind of like the same way that Prid Ratchet gets his scalpels. So I've given him like a chainsaw hand and a chain axe hand. And it's kind of fun. And it looks really good. The black ones look great with the Viacon. So that, I suppose if you did buy a ton of the black Capsule Arms Micron Beast weapons and you got a whole bunch of Viacons, you could have a really good time. But I just now, while Seth was talking, put together something that I really enjoyed, which is I combined the two snakes with the two geckos and I made a dragon. And I kind of like it. All four of its legs are individually poseable because of the nature of how the gecko weapon comes together. His tail's poseable, his head's a little bit poseable. This, to me, is starting to make me see what the point of these Capsule Arms Micron's beasts are, which is, and again, it's just stemming off that stated intent of Arms Micron. It's kind of just like open source toy play. It's kind of, you know, easy example being sort of like GLaDOS. It's just like, put them together how you want. So now I have a little dragon, and that's kind of neat. And he's made of chainsaws. I'm going to call him Chainsaw Dragon.
So that's what I have coming from the Mystical Orient.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're cool. I mean, if there's a problem with them, it's that they're not like screwed together or anything, so they come apart really easily, like the joints if you just yank on them. But everything holds together just solidly enough in the individual weapon modes to work as weapons, and I think they're really cool as weapons. And they all have like additional pegs and peg holes on them, so you can like just slap them together and like build crazy gigantic weapons out of them. Like this dragon started off as me attaching the two chain axe geckos to one of the chainsaws to make basically a giant double-bladed chain axe, and it looked kind of cool. So they're kind of fun. I might end up pre-ordering the other things from that lineup. I also wanted to mention, because basically, like, Orson from Catch and Prey has passed stuff along in emails, and it's an interesting thing, and I was like, oh, I like these Capsule Microns. I'm going to mention it briefly. He's doing a thing where if you're his 1,000th paid order, he's going to give you stuff. I have no idea how to tell if you're his 1,000th paid order. He'll probably tell you, but that I found kind of neat because it reminded me of way back in the day when, you know, there were actual stores and they'd go like, our 100th customer gets a hamburger. He has a bunch of stuff like in a Blu-ray player and whatnot that he wants to give away. So, he's probably going to tweet about it, and that'll be way easier a source of information than me playing with my little Arms Micron dragon. But these Capsule Arms Microns things, they're neat. I saw a lot of people disappointed with them. I see where they're coming from, but once I saw them as just like a kind of fun building toy, I really like them. I'm not sure if I want to order the new ones online or if I want to just like try to find them at conventions, because these are like, these are perfect convention toys.
I have yet to own any of the Arms Microns, but I've heard some complaints about the joints being really fragile and breaking. Have you
on the cap
had any worries or seen any of that stuff?
On the capsule ones, I've had some joints come apart because they're all friction joints pretty much. Like these things are literally model kits that were built.
I mean literally breaking, like plastic breaking. Have you seen anything like
that? I haven't had that happen yet. I could see that happening if you were to bend a joint in a direction it's not really meant to go. But I mean, so far the joints that when I've bent a joint the wrong way, it's just come apart and I put it back together again. So I don't know. I mean, if something does happen, I'll mention it, because that stuff is important to spread.
For the second wave, you should just get this that I'm putting in the chat. Just get that, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll just get the case of 300, and I'll be set. I got, you know, a spare 850 to drop. It's 63 pounds. I'll be good going over the border. The best part is those cases of 300, they're all still in individual capsules. So you have to go through and open up 300 capsules.
I know, that's awesome. It's fun.
Oh, man.
You can make a video opening all of them.
Oh, man. Yeah. I have a 6-hour video.
Great.
Trucking our way through nearly 100 pounds of capsule toys.
Yeah, but think of all the ad revenue from all those hours of people watching.
Oh, pays for man. Itself. I could just make $8.50 off that video alone. I'm going to play the system. I'm going to play it hard. Bot shots, Arms Micron capsules. Last thing I got, this is going to be a little bit of talking, but it's because a lot of people I think didn't really get this toy, and I almost didn't either. Jason Ho, of jasonhohoho.twitter.com, did a trade with me recently, whereby he asked if I wanted a Human Alliance Soundwave, in exchange for me getting him a first edition Battle Begins 2-pack thingy with the three kids, Prime and Megatron. And I want to say, he was very cool about it, because I said, I'd be up for it, but would you mind if I waited until it goes on sale, because we have a billion of them? And he said, that's cool. So I waited until it went on sale, and I grabbed one and did the trade with him. Human Alliance Soundwave came in. I also want to mention, Jason Ho is a Glios dude, and he asked me if I like Solaris, because he heard me talking about it a lot. That's the Glios plastic that glows red in the dark. And I said, yeah, so he threw in a little Solaris dude taped onto the box, and that was super cool of him. But Human Alliance Soundwave, this is a toy that I went into utterly skeptical, because I've been burned by Human Alliance. There are Human Alliance toys I've really liked, but especially in Dark of the Moon, I was pretty sure these were on the decline. Roadbuster was okay, and Leadfoot really sucked. no real two ways about it. Leadfoot only really works when you fan mode the F out of them, and even then, it's questionable. So I open up Soundwave, and long story short, I'm really pleasantly surprised. He comes with a tiny Patrick Dempsey, and that's always fun. He comes with a Laserbeak, who looks a whole lot like Laserbeak. The only problem with Laserbeak is his joints are weird, so he has no neck joint, so he's always got his head sticking forward, and that kind of limits his poses. And Laserbeak can kind of turn into a weird, like, missile launcher hover bike for Patrick Dempsey, which, as soon as I turned him into that mode and put Patrick Dempsey onto him, I was sitting there and I was going, like, why on earth was this not in the movie? Because this would have been awesome. That same hover bike is also, like, a shoulder cannon for Soundwave. Now, Soundwave himself, his car mode is awesome. It's great. It looks really clean, and it is densely packed with parts, and I really like the way it looks. And it rolls nicely, and the doors, it has, like, those gull wing doors. They work fine. Patrick Dempsey can sit inside happily. There's nowhere for Laserbeak to go, and I don't know if I care. I think that if they try to cram Laserbeak in there as well, the entire toy would have suffered for the worse. So I open up the instruction book, because Human Alliance toys, I need instructions to at least help me along. And then, you know, I open up this gigantic, cavernous labyrinth of instructions, and I'm like, oh, right, Human Alliance. So I get about six steps in, and at six steps in, I have, like, a half-exploded car in my hands with 100 billion moving parts, and I'm like, oh, crap, right, this is Human Alliance. Same feeling I had halfway through transforming Leadfoot, where I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. The nice thing about Soundwave is that by the time you're finished, you know what you were doing. And I was able to transform him back into his car mode with a little bit of tribulation without looking at the instructions. And I've transformed him about 20 times back and forth now. This dude is legitimately fun to transform. He's got a crazy Human Alliance transformation, but everything makes sense at the end of the day. And that's what I really like about it. If there was one improvement about the transformation, I would have liked it if all the parts that form his gigantic shoulders could have tabbed together at the same time. They completely make sense where they go, and they almost kind of lock in place just by holding against each other. And because they're not tabbed together, they kind of move around when you move his arms and give him clearance to basically do any pose you want with his shoulders, which I really like. Like, he's not cluttered up with his kibble. His kibble accommodates his jointing. His legs, the big turnoff for a lot of people, myself included, his legs are weird, but in person, they make a lot more sense, is the best way I can say it. They do not have to be tiny, weird, squat things that are standing on three little antennae. He does have three toes, but they actually kind of make sense in person, and you can straighten his legs out and make him look a lot less squat if you want to. The only real major problem I have with him is that his legs have this weird, like, double sideways joint and no locking mechanism, so it's easy to push him down and end up with him looking kind of like a dwarf, and that is his most solid stance, but it's not hard to straighten his legs out with a little bit of finessing. And he's got, like, a knee joint, and he's got universal hip joints. He's poseable. He's got very obvious, clean hands with knuckle joints that work. Another nice thing about Soundwave is he doesn't go out of his way to include Patrick Dempsey in his play pattern. There's no, like, weapon seating arrangement built into Soundwave. All that stuff is built into Laserbeak, which I think is a great design cue drawn from Human Alliance Jazz. It really works out in this case. And Soundwave, just, I like him. He looks cool. Soundwave in Dark of the Moon was a real kind of like nothing character, but this toy evokes something that never was, which was like, it feels like there's character to him. I like how they deviated from his color scheme by not making him a completely gray robot. They worked in a whole bunch of dark blue and fluorescent blue, like electric blue, which really works. Like it makes for all these little sonic blaster things on his body. One of them can flip up and it looks like a really cool, like sonic weapon kind of thing. He's got the thing that Human Alliance toys have where it's like his head is jointed. So you can actually have him open and close his mouth, which is really weird on Soundwave, but it's hard to explain why they made it work in a really good way. It's not spring loaded. It's just a nice simple joint. And the sculpting around his face does not look like it's a joint until you pull back on his head and his mouth is open and you're like, whoa, that actually works. Really fun to transform. Oddly solid robot mode for such a Michael Bay style robot mode. Fantastic car mode. I really like Human Alliance Soundwave. If you can find him for less than $50 and you do not detest the idea of buying just one more movie toy, it's not a bad idea. This actually feels like I was really surprised by how much I like this toy, and it feels like Human Alliance actually got its proper decent send-off. This guy feels easily on par with the mid-level toys in Human Alliance, and I am very slowly starting to feel like he's creeping up towards Bumblebee Jazz level in his own special ways. He's definitely outdone Barricade, and I feel he's outdone the twins. It just really helps that all the stuff he's supposed to do actually works and makes sense. It's really fun transforming this guy back and forth. It's immensely satisfying. So huge happy surprise there. Oh, there's one other thing. The instructions do have this one part that makes no sense, where they try to explain how Laserbeak can sit on his arm, and they kind of fail to. The driver's seats have a 3mm clip on them, and Laserbeak's claws are 3mm clips. So that's how he attaches to Soundwave's arm. The problem is there's so much stuff on Laserbeak that doesn't move very naturally. It's kind of tricky to get him into a position to actually, like, convincingly sit on Soundwave's arm. But once you figure it out, the fact that it clips on there, it's super solid. So, you know, many props to whoever designed Human Alliance Soundwave for going out of their way for a design that honestly didn't really deserve all this attention and making it, like, I actually have a movie Soundwave toy I really like now. And I did not think that would be the case. So thank you, Jason Ho, because, you know, this, if it wasn't for you and your trade request, this wouldn't have happened. But I am really impressed. And I'm really bummed out that this never came to the States, because the Dark of the Moon Human Alliance Sledfoot is everywhere, just stinking up toy aisles. And if anyone should be easily attainable, it should be Soundwave. He's easily the best Dark of the Moon Human Alliance toy I've messed with. Roadbuster, his alt mode is just so completely in pieces by its nature. Soundwave just wins out for having a super clean, solid alt mode and a super, like, bitty but sensible robot mode. It's just great. So I don't know. The problem with this guy is that everyone wants like over $50 for him now, because I think he's coming down in price because the Asian market has him. But, you know, try not to pay over $50 for him, because he is still just a Human Alliance toy. Do not pay like the prices the Japanese one was going for a little while. It's just not worth it. But anyway, I had to give some love to this toy, because very few people seem to really actually own him for very legit concerns I shared, and a lot of those concerns were actually alleviated. So props. I might bring this guy to TFCon just to like show him to people so they can at least know how he works.
You don't have to.
I want to.
I'll see him at your
place. Oh yeah, I know. You'll see him at my place.
Yeah, that's all. That's the only thing I'm worried about.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, if I could change one thing, I'd love to see a premium version of this done up with some silver paint, because it could really, really look great with that. And that's all I got. Human Alliance Soundwave. Recommended tentatively, if you can find it for a good price. GOG, let's get into the GOG haul.
Okay. I'm gonna go in, I guess, no particular order. I randomly saw a mold that I can't even remember how I seen it, but I was browsing through some galleries and stuff, and I saw a repaint of the Universe repaint of Beast Machine's Black Arachnia, and I was like, you know, I had forgotten that existed, and I was never a fan of the original Beast Machine's colors, but I kind of dig that color scheme, and I have never had that mold before. So, and I've been on a big spider kick, like, I don't know, just been, I've been revisiting Beast Wars heavily ever since BotCon kind of started, when I bought Big Convoy and then went into get the Robot Masters Lio Convoy, and then it just was kind of all downhill from there. So, but I was messing with my Tarantulas figures, and then had unpacked a box that had animated Black Arachnia, and was like, yeah, I really like all the Beast Wars characters and their spin-offs and like with animated and stuff that turned into spiders. So I ended up finding a pretty good deal on one on eBay. So I got it. And yeah, that was a pretty cool mold, especially for being, I believe if I'm remembering correctly, this is my first Beast Machines Maximal mold ever. I was just never a fan of how the Maximals looked in toy form. They never looked good. I've owned several Viacons. Like, I've got like some Jet Storms and some Cycle Drones and I think some other stuff, but I never had a lot of Beast Machines toys in general, but I never don't think I've ever bought a single Maximal. But
this is a
really cool mold. I think the way the legs, her biped legs split and turn into spider legs is really great.
Yeah, this is a very...
It kind of limits the articulation. Like, obviously, she can't have a thigh swivel or any real ankle articulation. I mean, it goes forward and backwards, but, like, no, you know, turning or tilt or anything like that. But
I think that mold
looks great in that color scheme. It's a huge improvement from the original.
So. Yeah, this was I got the original back in, like, when it was on shelves in Toys R Us. It was wildly ahead of its time, in my opinion. Like, just what it was able to do. And did you...
Yeah, and
you saw the eye gimmick, right? Like, that eye gimmick's amazing. Yeah.
And I just usually leave that down. Like, I don't care. Mm. But it's still cool how they...
I have the original also. That figure does a lot of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I felt a little... redeemed too, because everybody, well, not really redeemed, but I felt better about my purchase because everybody's like, oh yeah, like straight up, that is the best Beast Machines Maximal mold. So I was like, okay, good. I'm not just on crack and decided suddenly that some of these ugly figures are actually worth picking
up. If I can make a recommendation,
there's nothing to buy. So
look up Hammer Strike.
What's that?
There's a Beast Machines Maximal called Hammer Strike. He's a basic sized shark. And he's kind of cool. The Maximal molds, if you're going for show accuracy, a lot of them really blow. As standalone toys, some of them have some surprisingly fun stuff in them. Like, even, and this is a much maligned toy, I got this when it came out, and I sat there and I was like, I don't like how this looks as Optimus Primal, but the Deluxe Optimus Primal from Wave 1, the way it transforms is really interesting. A lot of those toys have, like, just the if you're an engineering junkie and you skip Beast Machines, and I'm not talking to you specifically, but just any listener out there, like check some of that stuff out. There's some cool stuff in there. But in your case, like, I'm only saying Hammer Strike because, like, there are some cool Maximals out there, but you've mentioned, like, the Beast era is kind of like your go-to during down periods. I wouldn't want you to blow your whole stock in what's in there quite yet.
Yeah. I might take a look at it. Beast Machines as a whole, and this doesn't reflect on my opinion of the show at all, but the toy line never interested me at all. So and so maybe there'd be a couple I'll go back and take another look at, but there's still so much from Beast Wars proper, as well as the Japanese shows, that I'm actively looking for. So maybe when I've gotten through that, I'll go and take a look at some of the Beast Machine stuff, because for as cheap as some of the Beast Wars stuff is, I'm sure the Beast Machine stuff is, I'm assuming that's even cheaper. So am I wrong there, or?
Oh, pardon? I got distracted by a direct message.
No, I was going to say, the Beast Machine stuff is probably even cheaper to obtain than Beast Wars.
Oh, yes, right? Yes. I think Beast Wars even is still not that hard. Like, loose, Beast Era loose, I think, is still some of the most affordable spending you can do if you haven't gotten.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Even in light of that, I would assume that, like, some of the Beast Machines stuff is even on the cheaper side.
Oh, yeah, on the bottom end of it, yeah, for sure. A lot of people have just, and especially even some of the better toys, a lot of people just let roll by.
Yeah. So, good mold. I'm really glad I picked it up. GM Fan keeps trying to get me to buy the Crystal Widow repaint. So, I don't know. We'll see. Because it's kind of the exact same paint apps and everything. It's just a different color. But so we'll see. But I'm really happy with that one. I got just today arrived. I finally got a Magmatron from Beast Wars Neo.
Oh, man.
He's the...
Huh? Tell me about him, because he's the toy. Every time I want that toy, I can't find him for cheap. And then whenever I don't want him, I see him for cheap.
Yeah, I got a pretty good deal on him on eBay. I got another eBay purchase. Actually, it was from the same seller that I bought the Black Arachnia. But I got him for about $50 shipped. And nice. The shipping alone, the sticker was $10. So he was basically $40 before shipping. It worked out pretty well. This is an interesting dude, I have to say. Like, it is a very unique Transformer toy. I don't know if there's ever been another quite like it. At least not that I've gotten my hands on, but... So, Magmatron, he's the Predacon, Neo, I think they were still called Destrons. But he's the Predacon leader in Neo. He is the rival of Big Convoy, which is another reason I kind of wanted to get him. So he doesn't really have, okay. So he consists of three beasts. They call him, I think, I'm just going off my memory, but I think there's Landsor, Skysor, and Seasor. So you have like a pterodactyl, you have like a tyrannosaur, allosaur, you know, carnivorous biped dude. And then you have like a plesiosaur, whatever it is, the long neck one that lived in the water. And the toy has a ridiculously long neck, and it's kind of segmented like a Corrada, but just thinner parts, ball joints. So the neck is really poseable. So those three animals can combine into one robot.
Or one dinosaur.
I've always been super fascinated with the design, and even more so when the Beast Wars IDW comics came out, The Gathering.
Yeah.
Because I thought Magmatron, they just did a really great design, or a really great job on the artwork for him. I believe that was Don Figueroa.
Yeah, I want to say yes.
Wrong, but I think it was. And he also has this ridiculous mode where all three beasts can combine, and it just looks like they're having some weird animal orgy.
Looks amazing.
And I haven't done that yet. I'll do it eventually for... You know, just for the sake of having done it, but it doesn't really interest me that much because it's kind of silly. But so, and I was kind of asking for opinions, and I had already kind of settled my mind on getting a Magmatron anyway. But I was just like, yeah, I think I'm ready to get one. I see one for a good price. You know, what do people think about him? And most people, there was a pretty good consensus as far as saying he definitely has flaws. He has limitations especially with articulation, but he is still a really cool toy and worth getting. So I was like, okay. So I was prepared. And I think that's a pretty good summation of how I feel about Magmatron. I'm glad that I got him. I think he's really cool. He's got a few limitations that are frustrating. And it's funny because the things that frustrate me about him the most are little things. Like, he has, like, the bicep curl hands, which is really hard because he has, like, a sword weapon. So it's really hard to kind of get him in a pose where the sword just looks really cool. If his elbows weren't bending in the same direction as his hands, or if he just simply had wrist swivels, or rotating wrist, rather. He does have wrist swivels, but they kind of swivel just in and out. They don't turn. And just even a tad bit more ankle articulation. Because he doesn't have any that much in robot mode. They're kind of static. It'll move a little bit, but it's not really intended to do that, and it kind of messes up the way that the robot feet are designed. If he just had a couple more things, like even for all his other flaws, it would have been exponentially better. That said, he's still really cool. And it's funny too, because, the one thing that I had heard over and over again is like, yeah, he doesn't have any head articulation at all. And I was a little surprised when I got him in hand to see that that's not entirely true. There is a neck joint built in for him that is used for, unless it's used in the orgy mode thing that I haven't done yet, it doesn't seem to have any other purpose other than to have him turn his head. But the thing is like, because his head resides in the pterodactyl portion, so he has like wings. It looks like wings are coming off of his back, and his head sits there. But the pterodactyl paws kind of reach over his robot chest and peg into, they tab into his chest. And it's a really cool design. His head will actually turn. It's very limited by those pterodactyl claws. You can get a few, like a couple degrees of rotation either way. But one thing that I found is you can actually pop those pterodactyl feet off the ball joints. They'll still retain their look aesthetically for robot mode.
Yeah.
And his head will then turn left and right without the limitations of that. So it's cheating a little bit, but that joint is there. It's designed. Or you could just, if you want to have a less aesthetically pleasing alternative, you can just not tab in the pterodactyl feet, and then they'll kind of creep to the left and right with the robot head as you turn it. But he's the most impressive part of Magmatron is just the sheer amount of tabs and pegs and everything that goes in. Because when you look at that, you think it might just be a mess.
Yeah.
But that thing is rock solid. Like, you could take that thing and just shake it, and at least on mine, and it is not going to come apart at all. Every single little piece just satisfyingly pegs and tabs into each other, and it just feels like there's a solid single unit transformer. And it's kind of incredible how that does. So, yeah, I mean, I think just with a few extra little design things, he would be near perfect. But with that being said, he's still a very interesting design, just from a design point, kind of like what you were saying about engineering for people who are into toy engineering and stuff. Like, I think this is another example of just a very just strange design that's never really been attempted again since something like this.
Yeah.
I think the closest thing you could come would be maybe like the Revenge of the Fallen Devastator.
And even that's really kind of stretching.
That's really pushing to try to find a relationship to another toy that doesn't really exist.
That's been my biggest regret about skipping Magmatron, is I am an engineering junkie. And back when he came out, a lot of people skipped him because in a toy line that was so poseable, and we were all still kind of, I think, getting used to, like, man, poseable Transformers. Like, Magmatron was like, oh, he's the brick. Just skip him. He's silly. And as time went on, I was like, he is a very unique figure. And he has a lot of qualities that I've still to this day have not, because I don't really want to mess with him until I get my own, because I just want to have like the full out, like I want to buy him and mess with him. So he's more and more, you know, on my shorter and shorter list of like, I got to get this guy just because of how he works. Like, I need to know how he works.
Yeah, and I felt the exact same way, and that's how I got him, and I feel satisfied with my purchase. I wouldn't have wanted to pay much more than that. There's several on eBay, at least as of right now. I believe that are like close to and over $100.
Yep.
And I I think that's too much.
Yeah.
But if you can stay around the 50, maybe like $60 price point, I would absolutely get him. And like worst case scenario, he's a great display piece. Like you will find static poses where he just looks menacing and completely badass and just so much different from anything else in your collection. He will stand out. So regardless, I think you'll find something in him to like. If you're into nothing but hyper articulated robots, then you may be really frustrated with him. But from an engineering standpoint, he is really great, and I think if something like that interests you, you should pick him up.
Yeah, I would love to find him for around $50. 60, maybe now 60, but whenever I actually want to buy him and I see him somewhere, he's always like 80 to 100, and I'm just like, I really don't want to do that. I just saw I was on Big Bad today because they're clearancing a bunch of their Japanese Beast stuff. You know, there are $6 Stampies on there. There are still people giving me excuses why they don't want to buy Stampy, and I just don't understand them anymore. He's still $100 on there, and I was like, damn it, because he was actually one of the ones where I was like, I wonder if he's on sale, but he wasn't.
Yeah. But, and it was funny too, because like the one that I got was an original. The box was old and dinged up. It had shelf wear, but it was still mm-hmm. sealed. The toys inside were mint, but it was an original Japanese version. It wasn't like a Korean box.
For a while, I was even getting ready. I was like, I'll buy the Dinobots version because he came out in Beast Machines very briefly with a Dinobot Spark Crystal. And I think that's really cool. Yeah. But
yeah, from what I read about that, there was just a little bit of a. I think they rounded some stuff off for safety reasons and he was missing a couple of paint apps, but. It's not like he has so much paint on him where it would be a deal breaker.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to see the Beast Machines version for a decent price, I say go for it.
And I have all the other Beast Machines Dinobots. I loved the Beast Machines Dinobots subline just for the fact that they were their own faction. Like, they weren't Autobots, they were the Dinobots. And I think that was a really cool idea that I... It's kind of a bummer when it does just sort of died off. Like, that was neat. That's cool. Krasis is all up on his Beast Wars at TFCon thing. I might just be all up on a Magmatron at TFCon thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll keep an eye out for one for you.
All right, cool.
What next? I got two more Transformers. One I really like and one I really don't like.
Uh-oh.
I kind of liked your foreshadowing in, what was it, 206?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. So, and I had resigned myself to just skipping... Wave 4 of Prime Robots in Disguise completely, with the exception of like when the revision case comes out, getting more Viacons. But I'm just like, you know what? Like, I don't need And I'll say this too. Like Dead End from Wave 4 Prime RID, I don't remember him looking this good at BotCon. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention because of all the non-repaint figures that were out, and I just wasn't really looking at Dead End that much. But mm-hmm. Dead End's paint is strikingly beautiful. Like, it just looks great. It is just high contrast. The colors are just the most bright colors I've seen on a Transformer in a long time. And it's, like, glossy. Like, it just looks like... Someone just took a custom paint job to this toy in the best of ways. Like, it looks so good in person. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I will get a Dead End eventually. I don't want one today, but that is a beautiful looking toy.
I've been hearing a lot of good stuff about it. The moment I put up the Wheeljack review, I got a message from someone going like, maybe you don't do videos on repaints. Could you please at least spend 2 minutes just talking about how good Dead End looks? And I was like, okay, I'm hearing a lot of good about Dead End.
Yeah, so... He's very nice looking. So I still don't know if I'm going to get him or not, but I would never give anybody a hard time for buying that repaint. And then there was, of course, Arachnid, and I was going to not buy Arachnid just out of principle. And the principle being that I shouldn't buy and support horrible toys. And then I read the description of Arachnid's character change in the Japanese version of Transformers Prime, where... She's not like this headhunter who traveled around through the galaxy, you know, getting trophies from other species. She basically, you know, much like you talked about in 206, was a bit of a boy hunter, honk hunter, whatever you want to call it. So, I don't know. Like, at that point, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy Arachnid just so she can bear hug my little Jack first edition figure. So, and I have something in mind what I'm going to do. I'm not going to get into that yet until I decide how it's going to go in its final form. But
whatever you do, please post it on the Prime Forum.
I wasn't prepared for how bad Arachnid really is. Like, it is just a mess. It is a horrible mess of toy design. And it's just funny because, like, on the subject of engineering, like we have been in this segment, Arachnid is if you are into toy engineering, you should buy Arachnid because this is going to show you exactly what not to do with a figure.
Yep.
But for all Arachnid's design cues, I don't know who decided that let's put some budget and moving parts into, well, let's have an opening cockpit in the helicopter with a pilot seat.
Yeah.
Of all the parts of her character that were completely omitted, let's engineer in, like, vehicle gimmicks. Like, I don't, it just, and not only that, but let's put the chair on the back of her head so that when she's in robot mode, her head cannot turn more than 3 degrees in either direction. It's just mind-blowingly frustrating, like, how you could look at this and think that someone in a position of power at Takara Tomy could, or Hasbro or whoever, would finalize this and say that, yeah, this is okay. Like, this is a good representation of this character. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, she has ball jointed hips with not just ball joints, but with that extra thigh swivel bit built into that at the socket. And she can't use them at all.
Yeah.
It's just, her arms are just, it's just like rivets with plastic connecting them with giant hands. She looks like she got one of those hands from a basketball game and she's waving it around trying to make somebody throw a brick.
Her wrist is all crooked too. Like, every shot I've seen, I mean, I talked about this last week. I watched like 3 videos about the toy, 2 photo shoots, as many opinions as I could, just trying to see if I could crack the code on that toy of, like, what's the thing in this that works? All I can figure out is, number one, her colors are nice, and number two, she has an okay helicopter mode. And it's like, that's it. That's all I can see. And I don't understand how a toy like that can happen in 2012. I tweeted about this after, I think it was after you posted your thoughts and photos, and that was like one of the last time, like, that was kind of the breaking point for me, because you were the first person I knew well to get the toy, and I was just like,
well, I thought I was doing something wrong at first, because, like, I had posted the bit about the chair. I'm like, the chair is on her head and it doesn't do anything, and, like, Random Factor was like, well, doesn't it fold away? And I'm like, you know what? I haven't really watched any reviews for this yet, so, and I haven't really looked at the feedback thread that much, other than just everyone basically saying in unison that it sucks. So maybe I am missing something, and then I'd feel dumb if I'm even, like, going into, like, exaggerated levels that aren't even true about the figure. So then, like, I popped the head off, and then I realized, like, oh no, like, and it's not even a matter of, like it's a little optional piece that's screwed on that you can remove, because the chair is, like, the light is clear, so it's like the end, it's like the input of the light piping or whatever, but it's also the rear half of the ball socket that her head rests on. So if you were to unscrew the chair part, it would put her head in half, and she'd no longer even have a functional head. So you physically would have to take a pair of, like, clippers and clip the chair off in order to do that, but it would physically, permanently, irreversibly damage the toy.
I find her self-blocking of her own articulation to be one of the most baffling things about that toy. Like, yeah. Especially when you bring up, I didn't even realize she had the separate thigh swivel piece. Like, what's the point if you have these huge, crooked, jagged things that, like, are geometrically opposed?
There are several joints that were built into her body that are unusable.
Yeah, I don't get it. And that makes me even more interested in a way, because it reminds me, like, I brought this up on Twitter way back in Armada Thrust, the cone head squid head guy with the weird gimmick where his chest plate would just inexplicably, like, over engineeredly extend out and spin. At a BotCon right after he came out, I believe Aaron Archer basically said, because someone said, like, what are we all doing wrong? And Aaron Archer was like, that just didn't work. Like, sorry about that, guys. It just didn't work. And by the time we realized it didn't work, it was too late to stop making the toy. So, sorry. And so I have a feeling Arachne is just like that one toy every couple of years of just like, they tried a bunch of stuff, and by the time they realized that it just wasn't working, it was like, it's too late. We've sunk enough money into developing this. You know?
It's kind of, I mean, kind of like Galvatron. And I don't hate Universe 2.0 Galvatron at all. Like, I think it's a passable figure, and I know it's very unpopular to think that, but it's kind of the same thing in that there were all these little design cues where you can see they were planning on something, but at one point they just ran out of time, and they just went with what they got, and it literally had half gimmicks engineered that were never realized, but it was in the CAD, so they had to do it.
Yeah, or you know, the RC triplets, the slot flap, you know, that thing. But I like, knowing all this, I find Arachne just so weirdly frustrating, because I'm like, number one, I don't see what was started and not finished in her, other than like the entire toy. Like, it looks like they made the vehicle mode, and then just, I don't know. And that's why also I was joking on Twitter, like, I'd love it if we find out that was done by the same guy who did the Viacon, because that would just, you know, the whole world would stop making sense.
Yeah, and it's possible. Yeah. Like, there's...
Totally
like,
possible.
I mean, whatever. Yeah. It to me, it doesn't even matter anymore. Like, I was going off on that whole thing, like, I want to know who made this, but so we can laugh at him, but it's like...
I'm behind you on the idea of, like, the part about this which is legitimately a bummer is that that's Arachnid's toy right now. And as far as we know, that may be Arachnid's toy forever, aside from her Legion toy, which we saw in-depth at BotCon and looked like one of the weakest Legion toys.
Yeah, it's a shame. And, and that's the thing. Like, we're already going to get two Arachnid toys.
I don't know.
You wonder. It's like, so if Arachnid is this bad, does that motivate them to go back and revisit the character, or does that just say, like, you know what? Like, Arachnid toys are not doing well. Let's just give up and revisit the popular characters.
I feel like she presented the same challenge that Animated Blitzwing presented, only because of Animated Blitzwing and a couple of other toys, like a lot of movie toys, especially. When I saw Arachnid's character model, I didn't think, oh, that's never going to work. I thought, oh, I can't wait to see what they do with that. And this is the first time in years where that didn't pan out in any way, shape, or form to me. Like, it feels like...
You know, I'd say, like, with Blitzwing, at least it was passable. Like,
Blitzwing, I think he's fantastic.
He had some serious flaws with, like, the way his wings were in robot mode and stuff, but, like, he wasn't a failure of a figure. He just... He wasn't as great as everybody had hoped.
I'll step up to bat for him, even. I'll say, like, for 08, I think, you know, considering that was, like, one of the first animated Voyagers and one of the first triple changers in forever, I was like, that whatever, great. And they got the face-swapping gimmick in there. I was like, this is fantastic. Arachnid couldn't... They couldn't get the spider legs. They couldn't get even... I mean, by the time that you look at Arachnid and she's designed to have one of her legs literally sticking straight up behind her head with a peg there to allow it to do that, I'm just like...
Yeah, like, and they even engineered, like, okay, this is the other thing. Like, the nose cone of her helicopter, you can open up the cockpit window and flip that nose cone into there, and then that top leg will peg into a tiny little tab on the window of the cockpit. Or you have an option, or you can just not open up the cockpit and just flip the nose cone back. It'll rest on the window, and then you can peg the leg into a little tab slot inside the underside of the nose cone.
What was happening?
Why would they engineer two different ways to attach the leg when... It doesn't matter. It makes no difference how you do it.
And that's the mystery.
But they engineered this in.
Well, that's to me, I think that's between that and my big clincher for this is that on the package, they literally refer to those things on her back as a triple bladed sword. Where I'm just sitting there going, like, my hypothesis, this is my little silver lining hypothesis. They tried to engineer her spider legs into her deluxe toy and kept trying and kept changing ideas. And by the time it was time to lock down the design, all that was left were, like, these bits and pieces of all these different things. And they were like, well, at this point we can only fit three in there. Just call it a triple-bladed sword. Because, I mean, if you look at her, the coattail she has, where that little bit on the bottom splits in half, that looks like the start of a spider leg gimmick as well. And I'm just sitting there going, like, that is the only thing I've been able to extrapolate out of that toy so far without having it in hand, is that I think they were trying something And I think whatever they were trying, the vestiges of it are left behind in the blades and that weird coattail. But that's all I got. Because, I mean, her arms, I don't know, you know, and her, all the stuff that butts into itself. And I didn't even realize that thing about the cockpit seat in the back of her head until you disassembled the toy. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it's mind blowing. But now, I don't want to spend any more time on it. It's a crap figure. From Arms and Micron. I still see people who are going into the feedback thread saying, like, oh man, like I bought this toy and, like, you know, I didn't think the pictures looked that great, but it's just like, no, like how could you not know by now? Arachnid, because, like, everyone has told, and I knew it before I bought it. Yeah. Like, I'm not, there's no, like, rage on my end where it was like, oh man, I got fooled into buying this. I knew.
Yeah.
And I bought it for a very specific reason, which is I'm going to have a lot of fun with this toy by the time I'm finished with it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well,
it was, but that being said, it was still worse than what I expected.
There are a couple, and literally I've seen it's two. There are a couple people who are still sticking up for that toy, and, you know, all the power to them. And I'll give them that. That might be part of the source. I don't know. I mean, literally, like, I want to give him a shout out because I think he's a podcast listener. You know, True Nomad Skies is a friggin', you're crazy, dude, but keep at it. Staunchest.
Does he like the figure?
He doesn't own it yet, but I think because he doesn't own it, he's a staunch defender of Arachnid. And if you're gonna be the dude, I give you full applause. You know what? I want you to buy the Arms Micron one as well, because that's gonna be available for about $45. It'll come with a Micron.
Nah, I mean, it's cool if you want to defend a figure that you've had, but you can't defend a figure against people who own it and say it's bad when you haven't had it in hand.
I'm gonna concede everything I've seen. I think Arachnid's colors look great. It's a great color palette. It looks like the colors of the plastic are all cool. Mm-hmm. But, like, that can only take you so far. Like, I don't know, there are a lot of crappy toys that have some really cool colors on them. But
I mean, yeah. Like, even her helicopter mode is just, like, it doesn't have any landing gear or anything. It like, it's fine. For what it is, it's a representation of an already horrible polygonal vehicle mode on the screen. Her spider legs, like, it's almost like they tried too hard to make her spider legs because, you know, at least they kind of resemble helicopter blades both in helicopter mode and her robot mode, which are the only two modes this robot has.
Yeah.
So they should have just made them helicopter blades and then just fold down on her back and it would have been fine.
Yeah.
But it's like they engineered in these, let's make them look extra like spider legs, except for she doesn't have the spider mode where she would use them. Nothing about this makes sense at all.
I want to say, like, you know, Hasbro will always try, and Takartomi will always try stuff. Sometimes it just won't work. And, you know, it's a bummer that a design I love ended up being one of those that didn't work. Because I think Arachnid's design, if you haven't heard Primetime, it's fantastic. It's a great design. And I hope that it can get a better toy down the road. Either that or, you know, I'll have to start up, you know, third-party company. TM. We're going to make the Boy Hunter. It's actually a song. I didn't know that until a couple days ago. Anyway, yeah, let's leave Arachnid alone for now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe I'll bring it with me to TFCon.
Yeah, just let people see it.
If it still exists in its current form. We'll see. Okay, I have one more on-topic thing, and that is I finally got Gutokuru Minerva.
Yes.
I like this figure quite a bit. Before I had gotten mine, we had seen some in-hand shots from somewhere in Japan, I believe. Those photographs were horrible. Like, the colors were washed out. They were macroed in so much, like, you could see any type of, like, little tiny mold flash on the inside of the, like, the helmet and stuff. Stuff that is not meant to be aesthetically pleasing was just zoomed in, and it looked awful. The lighting was bad. The camera work was bad. Everything was, like, super macro to the point to where it was, like, 10 times the size it was meant to be. It was just, they were really bad pictures. And a lot of people were like, oh man, like, have you seen those pictures? They look horrible. And I'm like, well, that, I'm thinking to myself, like, that doesn't look like great photography. I'm going to wait and I'll craft my opinion and I'll give it a fair shot. And if it's bad, I have no problem saying that it's bad. I will be very disappointed, especially after my other foray into the line, Noriko Takiya. But so I got mine in hand. I like Minerva a lot, and I think Minerva is a good figure. I think some people have been disappointed because she is not the best thing since sliced bread, given the price that they paid for her. And that is completely acceptable. Like I've said before, like, no one can tell you, should tell you what you can and can't like. No one should tell you whether you should be disappointed or not. Like, there's no wrong opinion in most cases. I've heard some wrong opinions, but it doesn't happen very often. My outlook on this figure, before I go into the actual physical merits of it, this is a figure that has no right to exist at all. Like, no one in their right mind, no toy company should have ever visited Master Force and made a Minerva action figure, or, in for that matter, the upcoming Jinrai figure. These are just freak things that have happened. For the people like me who are into that, and I'm saying this equally for Jinrai, because I want that Jinrai. I think it looks great. I'm thanking CMs that they made these. Yeah, they're a bit pricey, but you have two options. Either they can make something like this for a niche market, and you're going to pay a premium price for it because it is a collectible that you otherwise would have never gotten, or they just never get made. And I fall into the category of, I am willing to pay the extra to have something like this that I think is really awesome, and because otherwise we're not going to get Figma Minerva. We're not going to get a Figma Jinrai. You know, that stuff is not going to happen. I don't mind. It's not like I'm paying $200-$400 for a little figure. It is just a bit more than what you would normally pay, or maybe twice the price. Instead of paying $40, you're paying double that. So I don't have a problem with that, especially when you keep in mind the circumstances. It's either that or nothing. I'll take that. Well, I'll take what we got over nothing any day. So having Minerva in hand, she basically has the exact same joint system as Noriko has, which I'm assuming by now, only having two of these, owning two of these figures from this line, that seems from what I can gather to be their standard joint system. Like, every line tends to have its own kind of trademark joint system, and this seems to be CM's with Gutokuru. Everything is kind of shrunken down in Minerva from Noriko, because Minerva is noticeably smaller. And I believe that is because Jinrai, you know, Jinrai is a big guy compared to Minerva, so they didn't want to make a giant Jinrai, so they kind of shrank Minerva down a tiny bit so that Jinrai would be in scale with her, which I'm fine with. Noriko's joints are rock solid. Like, you could give her a little shake, and even her hips and everything are not going to move. Minerva is not as rock solid as that. But her, at least on mine, her joints are still fine. Like, she can hold a pose. Like, it's not like she's fallen under her own weight or anything like that. Like, it's not that. It's just her joints have a bit more of a, maybe a tiny bit of a squishy feel, or a bit more of a give versus the rock solid, like, super tight, plastic feel that Noriko had.
Yeah.
So I do think Noriko is a better figure. She's also larger and more expensive. So there's that. I don't know what to say. I feel like I've been talking about this figure for nearly a week straight now.
As I mentioned,
well, that video you did is really good.
Okay.
Like, I decided to pass on the figure because of price, even though I thought from the pictures it looked cool. After watching your video, I started thinking, maybe I shouldn't have passed on it, because it you really break down, like, where other people just didn't really get into it in their opinions. Like, you still point out shortcomings, but you do a really good job of explaining, like, here's what's different and here's what is interesting. And, like you were just saying about the size, how she's a little bit smaller than Noriko. Like, I think that's fine, because not everybody in real life is the exact same height. So you could still display those two next to each other, and I think it's fine. And when I always forget the character's name, because they usually just call her Commander in Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, Motoko Kusanagi.
Yeah. And like in your video, you were saying she's going to be even taller, which
yeah, I think
I would imagine she would be.
Oh, for certainly. Like Noriko is like 17 years old. I think Minerva is 15, turning 16 or something, or she turned 16 during the show. So, yeah, you can make it make sense. I mean, and Motoko, she's not tiny. I mean, she's a full-grown woman, and so and she's probably tall for a woman as well. So, but
yeah, I might have to get that one, though, because I like Ghost in the Shell. I'm not as hardcore as you are about it, but I like Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, but that, yeah, and I'm really impressed with this line, and I think Motoko is going to turn out amazing. And I'm just in like all the gun accessories and stuff. Like, and that's the thing that has really impressed me.
And
with
her cyber brain casing in the back under the hair. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like my whole theory when we first saw the pictures of Minerva was she was going to like have like a, like you could take the head off and put it in this gimmick and like have like a standalone Minerva head or something, because my brain could not comprehend why they would engineer the transforming head on the back of her. On the back of her back, which under normal circumstances you never see, unless you uncanonically take this part off and have her hold it or something like that. That's something that you should never be able to see. But the designers like engineered that in just for fun, and they did the same thing on Motoko. Like the blog post that the guy had, he's like, well, you know, you can take her hair off to swap out different hair parts. And it was just going to be like a square part. And I said, well, you know, even though it, you know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense given the context of what we're doing, why not just make it look like a cyber brain? And like, so these guys, like, they're putting a lot of love into what they're doing. They're having fun and putting in little gimmicks and stuff that make no sense. But for fans of the character, it's just absolutely amazing. It's like just eye candy. So like, it's really awesome. So, I don't know. Like I really just like Minerva.
Everybody
she's not
go
perfect.
Watch Dog's video.
I'd highly recommend. If
well, I'm glad it turned out well, because I don't do stuff like that, and I felt like I was rambling a bit, but I wanted to explain why I liked it, because main reason why is because there were only two videos on YouTube, and both of them I felt were, or not just felt. I mean, they were for the most part. One was even more negative. It was just absolutely just like, oh, this sucks. My life is horrible. But
oh dear.
But I was like, no, like I don't like I this line has a lot going for it, and it is very innovative, I think, as far as toy design goes. And while Minerva might not be the perfect figure ever made, my opinion still holds that she is really good, and I think she is very poseable, and I think the engineering they put into that to give her the amount of poseability while not even being able to see the joints or the seams is CMs is doing some really cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to this, from what I can tell, like they've done nothing but like little sexy anime girls and stuff.
Well,
which
they've done.
It's just, I'm not interested in that. Like they've even done Queen's Blade, which I didn't know about until recently. Yeah, exactly.
Well, see, CM's Corp has also done robots.
I came across the anime on Netflix.
Yeah,
and man, I powered through a few episodes just to see what was up, and I felt dirty.
Mm-hmm. Well, like the main reason I think people should check out your video, number one, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably okay with listening to Gog talk about stuff. So number one, number two, I mentioned this to him in the pre-recording. His descriptions of the joints were really helpful when he was talking about Noriko, but actually seeing him moving the joints while describing them really filled in all the gaps for me. And I think that can, the videos could just, it gets across how those joints work without trying to figure out a way to say it in words. Like it's worth checking out. Like it's a cool video. Like not even just specifically for Minerva, but just to see how that Guto Kuru engineering is turning out. And
yeah. And
it proves to me, like I'm so happy, because I don't keep up with CM's interviews or anything, but like hearing all this stuff about them taking the time to put all this love into it, I'm really glad to hear it, because I've always wondered about CM's Corp because of their robot toys, where mm-hmm. I never understood. I was always like, are these guys just like, are they into it, or are they trying to cash on stuff, or what? Like, clearly there's some love in here, but, you know, especially with their transforming robot toys and their transforming toys always having some kind of really critical flaw, I was always like, who are these guys? And I got a much better idea of who they are through hearing about their interviews in regards to this Masterforce stuff.
But and going back and looking at pictures, like I see that they've had this joint system for a while. Like there are plenty of figures out there that looks like that have used these for the past few years or months or however long. But what's exciting to me is them getting starting to break away from let's do the little sexy girly figures and let's do freaking Transformers. Let's do Ghost in the Shell. Like, let's do Gynax.
You made a great point.
This is what's exciting to me, because if CMs is now starting to break into these more mainstream popular franchises, I think that they are going to be really good contenders. The only thing that's going to hold them back is the price.
Yeah.
But we'll see how much of an effect that has. But I really hope that they continue to branch out and do more licenses that have more of a mainstream and Western appeal.
And in unique ways. Like you pointed out, really importantly, I think, that's a Kusanagi figure that's actually, like, combat ready. Like, that's a huge
and like,
thing.
Like, because Yamato did one a couple years ago. And it, for one, it looked horrible because their joint system was completely inferior to what we were getting here. But they did her in that stupid lingerie outfit where I'm going to put on... She wears it mostly like in the early episodes of season one. But like everybody wants to do these Motokos, and I don't know. Like I'm glad that CMs, in a line that is based around sexy girly figures, they went in the complete opposite direction and make her look like a tactical badass with all the guns and stuff. Like it's just... They really seem to be making a concerted effort in the last year to let's get out of the little girly scene and go mainstream. That said, I still think it's a shame, and I meant to say this in the video too, and I got sidetracked and forgot to say it, but it was when I brought up Figma. But the thing that I like about, or one of the things that frustrates me about these Japanese toy lines, is, especially Figma, is they have so much of a chance to go into making stuff like that, but they keep sticking with the girl figures. Like with Figma, it's like they it's very rare for Figma to do a guy. Like they did Galgo 13, and then they kind of retooled that into Roger from Big O.
Yeah.
And they're doing a Link.
And how often do they do
male characters?
Yeah, they took a big risk and they did 12 male Kamen Rider Dragon Knight characters really well. Mm-hmm. But I felt so bad because the Dragon Knight line just it bombed as far as I can tell, and it was a bummer because those were some really interesting, especially for Figma designs, where it was like it was male characters getting this. There's one female one in there, but it's male characters getting this really cool full on like engineering treatment and basically throwing a gauntlet down right in Bandai's face. Bandai unfortunately took the gauntlet, and I think that's what caved the line in because they did a better figure, but. You know, Figma really tried. They got ballsy there, and I really respected that.
But CMs is doing that too because I'm not claiming to be a Gutokuru expert because the majority of the material that they've covered is stuff I have no idea even what it is. I can't look at their back catalog and tell you who any of them are. But it looks to me like Jinrai is the first male character that they're doing.
Yeah,
and I think, as I had pointed out with Noriko, that with the larger figures. With that joint system being even more beefy, it is totally, completely rock solid. And I have no question that Jinrai is going to turn out to be amazing. And I hope that this is successful for them because I would love to see them branch out and do more male characters and get out of the whole sexy girl trope and let's just go straight on full action figure and see where it goes. But, yeah. And I hope that they don't stop with the Transformers license after this. I hope that this does well enough for them to where they can justify revisiting in the future.
Be the guys who finally give us a friggin' posable Kamina toy. Like, for crying out loud, it's been 5 years.
Or stick with the girls and give us Circuit Breaker.
Yeah.
Sure.
For crying out loud, it's been 20-something years.
Yeah.
No, I was really happy to see your coverage on Minerva, because, I mean, I can see parts of that toy that I'm not going to get along with and parts I am going to get along with. And I'm glad to see, like, I liked the nice comprehensive coverage of the engineering of it.
That was what I was trying to do, and I'm glad that came across.
Or if you just want to see also, like, figures getting pulled open to see their joints, if that's, like, some kind of thing you have, there's a whole lot of that in there, too. So, FYI.
But yeah, at this point, I'm done talking about Minerva.
Yeah.
So like, I hope more people appreciate it. Appreciate for her for what she is, being a something that should have never happened, and a pretty innovative figure at that, regardless of its flaws. And my opinion is, regardless of all that, I still think she is a very good figure. She is highly poseable. She could have done with a few more faces, but given the Transformers license, it could have gone a lot worse. And I think it turned out well. And I hope that CMs continues to make more.
Yeah.
That's my own topic.
All right. I have one last little addition on topic. I was checking with someone to see if I can mention it. I'm not going to talk about it too much. But I also got a hold of a copy of the TFCon Shafter. Which hopefully by the time this podcast is up, I will be in progress working on some coverage of that. So those of you who are still on the fence about the TFCon exclusive toy Shafter, there'll be a bit of coverage there. I do want to mention the box has all kinds of Shibamura Prime art on it, and that kind of gave me fuzzy feelings. So I just want to throw some love out to the guy who I know doesn't listen to this podcast, Silas Zed.
There's a nerd.
Oh, he's such a nerd. I can't even believe it. Anyway, that's our on topic. Let's go off topic, gentlemen. Seth,
hello.
Did you get anything that was not Transformers?
I did. I got a few things. I got some little Lego dudes. The Hobby Shop, Hobby Town USA, their chain. But I guess they've got a source for Lego minifigs that are not otherwise available individually. So I was talking to the dude. Apparently there's a large group of people that buy Lego sets just to build the things, and they sell off the minifigs, which I think is madness. And this was the weekend before the 4th of July, so they were doing a 4th of July sale, and most stuff in the store was buy two, get one free. So I picked up three of them. And they had three of these Mon Calamari guys, which I just assumed to be Admiral Akbar. Apparently, it's not Admiral Akbar, but you guess what? I don't care. He's Admiral Akbar.
That's racist.
So I tweeted about it and then went to get some lunch. Well, I tweeted a Gog Dog about it because I know he's all down with Admiral Akbar. And asked him if he wanted one, and he did. So I went back and got a couple more minifigs because, you know, I can't just buy one. If it's buy two, get one free, I got to get another one and then a free one. So I ended up with five for myself. Almost all of them, obviously not the Mon Calamari guy, but the other four that I ended up with, they all have two faces, which is pretty cool. That Lego is really getting into this two face option thing. So one dude, he's like an evil doctor. He came with a hatchet, and he has, like, cyborg eyes, and on one side of his head, he has, like, a mean sneer, and on the other, he has, like, this weird, exaggerated, crazy person smile, and he came with a hatchet, so I thought, that dude looks nuts. And another one is a prisoner, so he's, like, striped shirt, handcuffs. He has got one, like, kind of badass face, kind of a mean eyes and a smile, and then his other face is like he's freaking out. So I have the freaking out face displaying. Then this girl, I think she's I know she's from the Monster Fighter line. I've seen her on boxes. But so she has kind of like a scared face and like a confident smirk, and I have the confident smirk showing a big ponytail hair. And then one of the dudes from the Alien Invasion, which I know is very near and dear to Gog Dog's heart. So he's the businessman with the head alien thing that goes over his head.
Oh. Yeah.
So I thought that's pretty dope. So I got all those guys.
Sweet.
Did he come with the head alien?
Awesome. I've been tweeting pictures with the head alien all night. Just look at Twitter for they all say dumb picture in the in there. Then I got some Marvel Avenger figures. I got all the first wave a while ago, and they tend to be lacking in articulation. And so from this wave, I got Black Widow, Hawkeye, and the Skrull Soldier. What did I do with the Skrull guy? Down here. Of the three, the Skrull guy has the least articulation. He comes with this big, goofy, oversized, two-bladed laser green battle axe thing. He's got that shoulder and that you tend to get with Marvel figures, but just a single hinged elbow, so he can only do about 90 degrees, and that's all his arm articulation. No kind of wrists, no other swivels, no articulation in the torso, a ball jointed head, those like Marvel kind of hips, then a single jointed knee that only gets about 90 degrees, and then nothing in the ankles. He's well sculpted. I mean, he looks kind of cool, but just really chintzed out on the articulation on him.
Then, a bummer.
With Hawkeye, better articulation, but not by a whole lot. Actually, no, I take that back. The exact same amount of articulation. Just single knee. But one thing that I really give him credit for on Hawkeye, it looks a lot like the actor. Like, really, really well done sculpt on the face. Just, like, with some shading, it would look even better. But just the sort of flat paint that they tend to use kind of smooths it out. Then with the Black Widow, the face sculpt on her is very similar to Scarlett Johansson, but the picture on the package looks even more accurate, and it's just something about the lips on the final toy just look, maybe the red is too bright, or there's something changed in the sculpt. It's close, but not quite a great likeness. But she has a lot better articulation. I'll tell you that much. She actually has wrists, for one thing. It's just a simple twist, but that's better than nothing. And she has the double jointed knee, and she has ankle tilts. She does, or just regular ankles, like toe down, toe up, not the tilt back and forth, which would have made it even better. But she also has the ever elusive thigh swivel.
What?
Yep.
Hang on.
Really, the only place that she's lacking is in the torso. She has no kind of waist or ab crunch or anything. Her torso is just a solid piece. And really, she's got no up and down to her head, only left and right. I don't think. Maybe it's just stuck on this one, but there doesn't really seem to be any reason why her head shouldn't be able to go up and down. Her hair is short enough to where it's not just crashing into shoulders or anything. Then the only other issue with Black Widow is she comes with her two pistols, but only one hand is really sculpted to hold a pistol well. Then the other hand, it would just be like, I'm holding it by the butt of the gun without any fingers in the trigger guard, which looks awkward and weird.
I'm an action figure.
What's that?
That's kind of like the I'm an action figure thing.
Yeah.
Where you gotta hold the thing with your whole palm over the entire gun.
Yeah, but her right hand has like the one finger sculpted out that fits into the trigger guard and looks good. Then both her and Hawkeye come with like the big, goofy, oversized spring loaded weapons that are totally unnecessary. But at least Hawkeye also comes with a regular bow. Unfortunately, because of his lack of articulation in his arms, you can't really get him in too convincing of a I'm drawing the bowstring kind of pose. But from what I hear from folks who actually know archery, the actor doesn't really know how to do those poses either. So that is a wicked burn. And that's it, unless you had any questions.
Not really. The thigh swivel thing makes me that's warming me up a little bit to the idea of some of those figures, but the Avengers line is starting to sound like it's as up and down as Star Wars.
Well, it doesn't get as bad as Star Wars, except for like with the Skrull guy's pretty lame. And that first wave Hulk is just kind of cruddy. Just it doesn't look very good, and he's got like a weird gimmick in his arms where they like swing around. But I kind of felt compelled to have the Avengers. So I'm pleasantly surprised with the Black Widow, though. The Black Widow is pretty good. It's not great.
It sounds way better. Yeah, that sounds way better than what I'd expect out of a, not just a figure in that line, but a female figure in that line.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds really good.
Yeah, and like they're almost there with that face sculpt, but it's one of the better female figures I've seen come out of Hasbro. It's no Zarina, but it's pretty good. And like the sculpt on the Hawkeye is nice. I mean, if you just want him in a fairly static pose, he's going to look pretty good on the shelf with the rest of the Avengers.
I bet the shades being help.
As horribly boring of a character as he is. It's just you can't do anything really dynamic with him. But he looks good otherwise.
Okay. No, if that's your off topic, let's slide the table back around like a lazy Susan over to Gog Dog. I want to know what you got that wasn't Transformers.
The only thing I got is actually something that I am. Oops, I had a link that I guess I was going to share with you guys, and I never hit send. But I'm going to send another one as well. I got the Zone of the Enders Vic Viper model kit from Kotobukiya. And it is most people will know the Vic Viper as being the famous ship from the Gradius shooter games, made by Konami. Zone of the Enders is also a game by Konami, and they put the Vic Viper in that game, except for it transforms into a mecha, and it's awesome.
God damn.
It's a little strange looking, but I've always loved the design. It's strange and goofy, but it's a Vic Viper, and I've always loved the Vic Viper. I actually have some Vic Viper model kits that I haven't built yet that are just the straight-up ships from the games, because I really like Gradius 5, and I have the one from that, and I think one of the older ones as well. But yeah, I'm almost done with it, so I'll keep my thoughts brief on it right now, but it's really great. I'm probably about 80% of the way through it, and I'll leave it at that for now. So I'll share my thoughts on it when I've completed it and panel-lined it, and he's able to transform and on the stand, and I have a gallery up and everything, but it's really cool. And that as far as I know, this is the first mass-produced available incarnation of this robot.
The big Viper?
I believe there were some Wonderfest kits, as there are with everything known to man in Japan, but yeah, it looks cool. It's a lot more in-depth than any of the other Kotobukiya kits I've built. Not that I have a lot of experience. I usually build the D-Style kits. They take generally about 2 hours from start to finish. Just on this one, to complete the legs, took me 2 hours. So I don't know how many hours into this I am now. Maybe 2, 4, 7, I'd say. Maybe about 7, and I'm close to being done. So, well, that's just assembling parts, not, like I said, not painting. There's decals. I haven't put those on, so...
I love that he has a big jutting piece sticking out of his torso, because it really actually makes me feel like that ship just grew into a robot without necessarily intending to. Like, in a good way.
Kind of true, because this was a ship that was never meant to transform into a robot.
Yeah, it looks literally like it looks like the pilot of the ship suddenly popped out of it as a robot and was like, whoa, hold on, okay. And just kind of like accepted it.
Yeah. So the cool thing too is like, the robot has like all the trademark weapons from the games, like the ripple beam and options that float around and shoot along with it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. If you've never seen Zone of the Enders but you are at least familiar with Gradius, either back from the NES days or any time between then and now, you should look up a boss fight. Just look up Zone of the Enders Vic Viper. Like the boss theme music is a remix from some of the music from the original NES game. It's lots of really cool homages, but yeah, he's cool. So I'll share my thoughts on him when he's done.
Excellent.
That's it.
All right. Well, I've got two things to talk about. Both of these also came from my trip over to meet up with Corinne on the Canada Day weekend last weekend. I went to a Target and I found all over the states while I was there that weekend Thundercats toys on clearance, which was a bummer to see, and a double bummer because most of them were toys I didn't want that were on clearance. However, at a Target, I found for $11 each the 6-inch Classics Thundercats toys they made. These were the second set of Classics collector-oriented toys they made, because the first ones they made were inexplicably 8 inches tall, which was odd, because it didn't really put them in scale with anything in North American. It put them in scale with a bunch of Japanese toy lines, but they went back and then redid Lion-O in 6-inch and did Mumm-Raw in 6-inch. So for about $10 or $11 each, I'm okay with these toys, but apparently they retailed for about $20 each, and I legitimately do not feel that they are worth $20 each for a couple reasons. Number one, I also want to say I found these to generally be more disappointing than the 6-inch figures based on the new Thundercats cartoon. There's a couple reasons why. Number one, Lion-O, Sword of Omens, bent all to hell, but I'm sure that's something that we would have come to expect by now. The bigger problem with Lion-O are twofold. Or problems are twofold. Number one, you see how his hips work there. You see how his hips look just a little bit wide? It's because the joints are all great, but the hips should have been recessed into his pelvis by another good, like, couple centimeters, and they're not. So it looks like Lion-O is built to birth things, which is really weird. Unless you put him in very specific, like, you have to keep him at angled poses. If you look at him from the, like, head on, his hips just look really weird because they're really wide. Number two, his head sculpt is stuck with him kind of going like, ah, which I find limiting because it means that he looks permanently like he's screaming. And this is compounded by Mumm-Raw.
Well, he's giving birth. Also, so, yeah.
Well, I suppose so. If he's permanently in labor, then yes, this works. And Mumm-Raw is also permanently stuck in this kind of face. And the thing is, it's not like they're good screaming. Like, if it was I would have loved this if it was just like, just like, you know, mouth wide open, like rage face. They just kind of have their mouths hanging open and they're frowning. They're just kind of like they're really upset about something they just saw. Mumm-Raw also, okay, number one, Mumm-Raw doesn't have his cape, which I believe that is kind of important to Mumm-Raw. Instead, they gave him all these bandages, and these bandages are all flying all over the place. They peg into his back to make it look like he's blowing out of the mummy wrappings, which is great for a pose. Aside from that pose, those bandages serve very little purpose and look kind of silly, because they're sculpted to be blasting off of his body. So you have him just standing there with those bandages on him, he looks hilarious, because he's just got these bandages going like, wah! Just like sticking off his body, and he's all like, ah, I'm Mumm-Raw. The posability on them is fine. Like, the jointing is great. Lion-O's accessory count is just like the 6-inch new version of Lion-O, right down to having the belt holster for the glove. It's fantastic. Mumm-Raw, they both come with spare hands. Mumm-Raw comes with spare hands to hold stuff that he doesn't have. So they're okay for like $10 or $11, but so many little things on them just they feel like they were incredibly rushed, which I already thought they might have been. So that's kind of a bummer. I don't think the Thundercats classic line has a future, because the Thundercats line already doesn't really have a future, and I just remain stunned at how something with so much potential in its first wave just completely nosedived the way it did. It's a bummer to see in action, and I still can't find the 6-inch wave 2 of the new ones, the Tigra and Chitara. I'm still looking for those. So I want to at least finish off the 6-inch toys. I don't know if I'm going to go in and finish off the Thunderlynx toys. Although, granted, I may end up finding them all for $5 at some point. I don't know. I went from being worried about Bandai doing this line to being really happy to going back to being kind of worried. And by kind of worried, I mean, like, man, what a bummer. Anyway.
Well, it seemed kind of crazy, because I remember when they were first coming out, the first waves of everything, I was seeing them flying off shelves.
Yeah.
And I was in Kmart, and there was this kid who was the appropriate age, got super hella excited when he saw the roleplay Sword of Omens, and I thought, hey man, you know, this show's doing like some really interesting story stuff. They're really kind of taking this concept of what this show is to a new level, and the toys seem to be doing great. And now all that you hear about is how it's all on clearance, nobody wants nothing, and the show is being canceled. It's like, yeah, what the hell happened?
On the merchandising side, given how they were flying off shelves, and now I'm seeing the Wave 1 stuff everywhere still, I got this feeling like Bandai just made scads of it and tried the... I don't know Bandai's business practices. I just have hypotheses about them. I hypothesize that they made some Wave 1, it sold well, so they were like, all right, well, Power Rangers it. We'll just flood them with Wave 1. And, you know, Power Rangers is one of those lines that can do that, and apparently, you know, I think Thundercats isn't. And I also really am bummed out by how I was so surprised Bandai was communicating about the line. They were on MTV Geek. They were talking about future toys, and now it all seems to have just fallen apart, and silently fallen apart. That's the part that bums me out the most, because silently killing a line is the Bandai I know, and I thought this was going to be some kind of new Bandai that was going to be way more cool to follow, and instead it's gone back to being the monolith who will try stuff and just kill it and not really communicate what's going on. And you kind of
It's a bummer, because for as long as I could remember, people complained about cartoon shows as just being 30-minute toy commercials. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of a bummer that we've gotten to the point where toy sales will kill a show.
Yeah. It sucks. And what sucks the most about it is when, like, right now, if it's a show that is not a Hasbro show on the hub, I'm not sure how I feel about his future. Because, I mean, if you have Bandai behind you, they might just drop you. If you got Mattel behind you, they might mismanage you. If you've got Playmates behind you, I originally would have said you'd be in trouble, but we're going to see with this new Ninja Turtles cartoon. I got good feelings about it again, but after seeing this up and down with Thundercats, I was seeing the same up with Playmates, but now I'm really worried I'm going to see the same down. So,
well, G.I. Joe wasn't safe just because it was on the hub.
That's true. G.I. Joe's never safe, it seems.
Well, not anymore. Not since the 80s.
Nope.
Early 80s.
But anyway, I'm going to stop talking about a bummer. I'm going to talk about something that's kind of neat. When I went to that Toys R Us out yonder in the States, I went to their little video game section, which we don't really have a decent one of those in the ones I see in Toronto. We don't get very much Nika stuff out here, but I saw the Nika Assassin's Creed Flying Machine by Leonardo da Vinci. It's $30. I forgot that it was out at Toys R Us, because Ichabod had told me about that some time ago. It originally was a GameStop exclusive, and then I guess just the GameStop couldn't sell toys, so they all just ended up in Toys R Us's for $30. So I picked one up. It's kind of cool. Hang on, let me grab it. So I've got the Assassin's Creed Ezio's. I believe it's the white and the black one. So I think that they're from Brotherhood, not from Revelations, but from Brotherhood, because he's got the goatee. And this flying machine, it has a wingspan of like, it's enormous. I don't have a ruler near me. It's like a 2-foot-long wingspan if the wings are fully outstretched. They can flap, basically, and they've got this cool framing system, so the support struts for the wings kind of like, they're like wooden hydraulics. It's really neat, and the tail fin can bob up and down. It's got really nice sculpting all over. The paintwork is great. It looks like it's made from wood and canvas. And then, like, the little projectile launcher on the top, there's a handle in front of it that Ezio can reach up and grab, and you use that to aim the thing left and right, and then you push down the top of it to fire the little, like, flaming wooden stick. So this thing is literally just, it's sized for 6 or 7 inch figures. That's what Nika says. There's no real way to fasten the toy in, which had me worried at first, but Ezio he just kind of, at least the one I have, who's a little bit bulkier than the one in the photo, because this is him with, like, his full-on armor. He just kind of fits in there, and then the heels of his shoes hook around the foot lock thing in the back, so I have his feet, like, his heels are hooked on it rather than having his entire foot over top of it, like in that photo, and then I just have, like, his hands kind of, like, the two most open, grippy hands that he has are kind of, like, just pressed against the part he's supposed to hold on to, and he's kind of in there rock solid. So, like, for $30, if you collect Nika figures and like not even just Assassin's Creed, just if you collect Nika figures and you want a crazy ass giant Leonardo da Vinci flying machine scaled for them, this does a good job. The top has a whole lot of detailing sculpted in. It's got like this little like drum and this all this wooden detailing and whatnot. It, like, you know, it's Nika quality. It looks really good. I've heard that the quote unquote wooden hydraulic parts, they can be very fragile. Mine feel pretty fragile. I'm very careful when I move the wings because I've already heard about these things breaking in a few reviews I read. But for $30, it's just so enormous that if it is something that would fit into your collection, I'd kind of recommend it. It's really neat. And it's also neat because it's a Nika toy that isn't a figure. And that's where I find a lot of my interest in their stuff lies right now. Is, I mean, their figures are pretty cool, but I like seeing the stuff they do outside of the norm. Like that Borderlands robot that you guys were talking about before. When I was in the States, I did see a Borderlands 2 toy, but it was just like the dude from the cover of the game. And it looked cool, but it wasn't the robot, so I didn't want it. I also saw the Nika Left 4 Dead Boomer, but it was $22, and that seemed kind of expensive. So I left it alone for now. But it was neat to see in a Toys R Us a bloodied, pus-loaded zombie that can be ripped in half. It was kind of funny. Anyway, Leonardo da Vinci flying machine is cool, and it's huge. It's way bigger than the box makes you think. Kind of fun to put together. Gog, have you seen the Boomer at all yet? Meant to ask you about that.
I kind of talked about it in 205.
My memory is awful, because now I'm remembering that you talked about it in 205. Forget that that happened. Was it $22 when you got it?
Yeah, that's the retail price. That's what I was saying, is it was, for some reason, the Boomer is more expensive than any of the other NECA stuff, so
yeah,
I that's what I was trying to figure out, or at least theorize as to why that was. But
I'd forgotten about that until I saw it in the shelves again, and I was like, "Oh yeah,
it was $22 in Canada."
Oh no, this was in the States.
I was going to say that would be a pretty good deal then, because that's the same price we got.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it in Canada yet. Oh, my memory's failing me because it's like past 2 a.m. So
yeah,
I think, given that I just finished my What I Got This Week off topic, and that we're pretty much at the end of the show, that's perfect timing for some, you know, on early onset Alzheimer's. Thank you all for listening, everybody. That's been myself. That's been GogDog. That's been Seth Buzzard. We are WTF and TFW. TFCon is coming soon, and that should be a good time. I'm looking forward to seeing a bunch of you guys there. Keep an eye on the schedule for stuff. I've got a panel with PR, and we're going to be in the bar a whole lot. And after BotCon, I am just going to record in the bar at least one night, because that went really well. That's about it. So, until then, good night, everybody, and make cartoons about us, please. It'd be funny.
Goodbye.
But you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.